Hey, kids. You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles, and pancakes. The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you?
Man, I'm hanging by a thread.
Now what?
My computer out of the blue just decided like 5 minutes before showtime that it was going to do a critical update, and then that critical update put it back into we're fucking broke zone.
Yay!
And so I'm just sitting here like looking at it, just going my fingers crossed, like, please, 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 pay for an hour. You got this. You can do this. I'm glad I have a $2,000 brick PC.
Yeah, that's good stuff. At least it's working, because we have a guest joining us.
That's great.
Yay! From Falling Squirrel, Dave Evans, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Well, Cole's computer is screwed up, so I'm doing okay.
Could be better, okay, could be worse.
By comparison, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, I want to have Joe's day today.
You do want to have my day. I got my Mountain Dew cake smash today, so I'm excited.
Did you?
Yes.
Did you see the flaming hot Mountain Dew going around on Twitter? I sent it to number one, and she texted me back, and she was like, are you like, messing with me? And I was like, no. It's on Twitter. I seen it. And so now she's like spent all day not sure if I was just fucking with her, because that's what I do as a mom.
No, that's apparently real. Dave, are you a soda guy?
I am. You know what? I've gotten into these sugarless sodas where I feel like I'm getting value because there's flavor. That's my thing right now. So yeah, I'm a soda guy. Sure.
Also, your thing, you just released a game, which is what you're here to talk about. You are not here to talk about Mountain Dew.
But I will. I will if that's what you want me to do. But yeah, I'm here to talk about a game.
I mean, have you heard about Cake Smash?
You know what? I haven't. I immediately felt old and confused.
It's cake-flavored Mountain Dew.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
It was like an online-only thing. They sold it like six cans for $12, and I ended up missing out, so I bought a six-pack off eBay for $35.
Yeah. I drank a lot of Mountain Dew in my teens, like a really ridiculous. It's probably going to come back. A doctor's going to tell me why I have something, and I'm going to mention the Mountain Dew, and they're going to say, that was it.
Yeah.
That's why you got this, whatever that is. Yeah.
That's why I expect this show to be over in the next couple of years. Anyway, you were here to talk about The Veil. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch. What is The Veil?
Yeah, sure. It's a, I'm going to say an audio focused game. I really did make it as an all audio game, but there are some visuals in it. It's an adventure game. It's set in a medieval setting, and it's essentially a game where you listen to a 3D binaural audio environment around you, and you listen for enemies coming to get you, and you fight them, and you also explore the world, trying to find quests and secrets and treasure and that sort of thing.
And walking into walls.
Although I went to great pains to make that the least common thing hopefully you'll be doing in this game.
What made you want to go with an audio-only game? It is such a unique concept.
Yeah, it's it started honestly from a place where I wanted to have an expansive narrative in a game, and having been in games for long enough, I know how expensive that is to make. And I thought, oh, what if I did an audio game, an audio focused game, sort of leverage some skills I have, which is directing voice actors, and I know that world pretty well, and I figured I could get some good performances and let everything sort of rest on the writing of the characters and the worlds I could create as cheaply as possible. And then it wasn't too long before I realized, oh, there's an accessibility component to this idea. So I partnered with CNIB, which is the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, and we started making a game together. Initially for the blind community, but very quickly we realized the novelty of this would give it some interest outside the blind community. So yeah, that's where it all started anyway.
One of our reviewers, the lady who handled this review, Aki, she is legally blind, and she said that when she started the game up and the narrator started telling her the menu options, she actually started crying because she was so touched that a game was going this far to help someone who was blind.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. That's what I would hope. I think what it kind of speaks to is the lack of content the community's had in games. There's actually about 1,500 or so audio-based games around. They're small sort of hobbyist games, most of them. And that's maybe the other thing that got me excited about this game is I got a chance to work in a genre that was already a little bit established in the blind community. But I got to sort of introduce sighted people to it and really take advantage of what it has to offer in terms of immersive play and that sort of thing. But yeah, there was a lot of development time went into getting those little things right. So that's really awesome to hear. And that's because I worked with the blind community. I would have fumbled around quite hopelessly if I hadn't done that.
Cole, what kind of questions do you have? You haven't said anything yet.
Well, one of the things that I was curious about is when you're creating a game as accessible as The Veil, where the entire premise surrounds being blind, have you given any thought to accessibility for people who are hearing impaired with a game that is so audio focused?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Ultimately, it comes down to the genre I chose. So the genre, like if media wise, if it was music, there'd be less questions about the specific accessibility for the hearing impaired community. And it was also the focus in terms of how I wanted to develop it and who I wanted to develop it for. Mm-hmm. I've made all my other games before that have been games with visuals. So this was what might end up being a brief departure from that. I suspect and thinking about this in particular, the idea that accessibility has become something I'm just hyper aware of now. Mm-hmm. I would think my next games would be about bringing what I've learned from this game with what we've done with audio and bring it to a project that is already accessible for hearing impaired players and also key binding stuff and things that would also satisfy people and with physical disabilities and stuff.
Me.
So
yeah. See, so the reviewer that handled The Veil for us is visually impaired. I am physically impaired, but also I asked about the hearing, particularly because I do have problems with my hearing from my disease. And so I could play the game, but I would definitely struggle if I was being attacked from the right side. And I couldn't help but think there were times I could really just benefit from subtitles just a little.
Yeah, no, and those are really fair questions. I also think that knowing that the blind community is not exclusively English speaking, mm-hmm. There's also questions about subtitling. The blind community, but there's people who are enjoying the game that thought they might enjoy it better if they could understand some of the language stuff in just simply subtitling. Not an obvious thought, by the way. I did not think, why would we subtitle a game that was
absolutely
visuals? And then I thought, there is a component of people just understanding the game or might have hearing issues. And then the other aspect of it is localizing it in different countries. But being a small indie developer, that's maybe the one thing that I do sort of remind people or try. I'd like to hope people think about this is you do what you can, I guess, is part of it as well. I think the big boys, the big players probably have more responsibility to get all the things right as fast as they can, I think. I think I'd like to think it's okay to focus on getting something right and then looking at how you can, in the next game. If there's an interest enough in the story, I can't help but love the idea that someone who is completely hearing impaired could play the experience of a blind character. There's something exciting about that, and maybe that's something I need to think about and how I could convert the game or maybe in a future project try to make something truly playable from in both communities.
if I could make some suggestions, I already mentioned subtitles, but just an audio cue where perhaps I know that you've tried to keep the screen dark, and there is the motes that float around, and they do change color depending on certain situations, like a fire scene will have them be kind of orangish and red. You could effectively do a light visual cue where the side that the enemy is approaching from may light up.
Yeah, and actually, it may not be crazy hard to take. I mean, the game is made in a 3D engine. These things mm-hmm. exist in space. And for me to put a camera on them and expose certain aspects of them and have lights, like, I mean, it certainly wasn't the focus of the initial game.
Yeah, absolutely.
But these are not crazy things. And the other thing I think about too is there's little things that, I mean, I had to get the game out. I had to get feedback a little bit beyond the blind community. They were my hundreds of people in the community tested this and gave me feedback. Mm-hmm. One thing, little things like having independent audio, adjustments for, let's say, combat music. So if somebody finds the combat music really making combat busier than it needs to be, they could take that down. Something that would heighten the volume of beacons or extra important sounds. These things are all flagged in the game. So there might be a way of having people, just like if someone wanted to keybind, they mm-hmm. could kind of audio tune the game if they're hard of hearing. So there's certainly things I will probably be looking at some point.
That's great that you would even consider adding them in eventually. I wanted to go back and touch on two where you said that you feel like it's more on AAA developers to get it all right. How much effect do you think small indie games that focus on these accessibility features help push AAA development?
It's a great question.
I'm not used to this. I'm not used to having good questions.
We're talking about something I understand for a change. It's usually retro games, and I'm confused.
Now, I think the first question is I'd like to think there's enough people working at a big company that they're watching what indies are doing. So I'd like to think that's probably happening. I know. Because of getting into this a little bit with accessibility, I do know that there is a lot of board meetings and things that go on at least Ubisoft and some of the bigger AAA companies where they are bringing people in, they're getting advisors, they're doing this stuff. But in terms of how much influence an idea within my game could potentially have, I'd like to think that if somebody's looking to take an adventure game, it would just be a nice starting point to look at what we're doing with audio. And I would say it's a little bit different from what, let's say, Last of Us Part Two is doing. First of all, I thought they did a great job. But what they've done is they've taken a game that works they're not really thinking about accessibility when they make the base game. And then they spent a lot of time and effort,
reverse engineering,
creating beacons and things. Whereas my game, my first thing I said is I wouldn't have robot voice in the game, and I wasn't going to have any radar or beacons or anything that was not in world. I kind of leaned on this idea of magic being, there's magic elements that the player can hear. So it allowed me to sort of not have to find like a waterfall or a flaming pit or air rushing over a hole or whatever it is I had to do to let people know that there were certain bad or good things in the world that you could find by listening for them. But I think there are things that that you could look at and build on when it comes to, they're all these little analogous things to sighted mechanics and sighted tells that are in games. And this is a step forward to having a nice connection to say like, I could take my combat system and add a couple of these things and then it would work. At the very least, there are games that have a huge amount of music and voiceover and narrative that is 100% accessible to the blind community. And they could start thinking, I think, about ways of delivering the pieces, the gameplay, I suppose, the in-between pieces. It might be what Naughty Dog's done. And the blind community is very comfortable with that radar type idea, or it might be something more immersive that's in my game, or maybe another game that comes out that features that.
So I was going to give you an opportunity to ask things because I was kind of running the show. I don't know how to do that.
That's fine. I like when you ask questions because it lets me browse at it. No. Let's me drink my Mountain Dew. No, I was going to ask, you mentioned that there is a 3D engine like behind everything. Is there actual visuals to this? Like if you were to throw a camera in the world, would it show anything?
Yeah, you'd see what looks like all the enemies are sort of what is it? The MIT robots, they're very boxy things walking around. Yeah, nothing's rigged. Everything's floating around, but I didn't know what kind of fidelity I would get out of the sound when building this. So I just built out a world that was representative of space. So all the voices that are coming from enemies or characters are coming from something that's set about a meter and a half above the ground, which represents the head or the mouth. They have bodies, they have feet, and I play all the sounds from those positions because the engine handles that to some extent. It lets you know if things are a little bit higher or lower. So I did all that not knowing what would happen. But at the end of the day, I do have a representation of the game. Oh, and swords and shields, they're all things in the world. They're just like squares and cubes and circles and stuff, or spheres. But yep, they're all there. So yeah, it's kind of interesting to see what's happening in that. I fake very little. There's a little bit of smoke and mirrors in areas for navigation. Maybe a not terribly interesting example, but if I want you to be able to walk and find a church bells far away, I have to make them sound far away, but bring them closer so you don't kind of line up your walking into a wall that happens to be in the way. That stuff like that.
I walked into a lot of walls trying to kill some rats earlier.
Oh yeah, that's one of the ones where one of the things with the rats is that because I don't know where exactly you're going to line up to the rats, so sometimes the next rat will be right behind you, and that's the biggest trouble with the engine or any kind of audio engine, is it's very hard to tell if something is directly behind you or far away and directly in front of you. So I think a lot of people, including myself, not paying attention, will walk straight ahead into a wall, not realizing that the rat's behind me.
Yeah,
that's why head tracking would be such a great thing for this game, because you just do a little tilt of your head and you're like, oh, that's behind me.
Oh,
you
know, I would love that would be insane.
That was one of the things when I was playing, I kept just kind of instinctively moving my head around. My husband was like, what are you doing? I was like, because I'm sitting there on the couch with my eyes closed, just with the headphones on and the controller in my hand, and I wasn't even pointed toward the TV. I was just sitting on the couch, and I was just, because that's really the best way to play. You're in nothing else but that moment, and you're in that character. And I kept moving my head and like tilting in different directions and stuff. And he was like, are you okay? What are you doing over there?
Like a bird.
And I was like, listen, you don't understand.
Yeah, this game is incredible with headphones. Like my normal TV, like the speakers, it's just basic TV speakers. So it sucks. But as soon as I put the headphones on and everything came to life, how the hell does 3D audio work? Because it's magic to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is an advent. Actually, it's been around for quite a long time. It's kind of sadly, I think it started as a military application, or maybe not surprisingly either, but maybe even in the 80s. But this idea of doing it in real time was really driven by VR. So as soon as people realize that, two things, one is you're going to have, headphones on in a VR experience, almost certainly. So you can count on that. And then that fidelity you get, and the ability to just kind of move your head around, the panning wasn't quite working, just having stereo panning. And then there's not really a surround sound application that works that well, with this. So, it was developed, or at least it took off with that. And, basically there's a binaural, it creates binaural audio, which is, it's just regular old stereo audio. It changes things in real time. So when you're moving the character around, everything kind of shifts accordingly. And basically it has this really high, aspect of precision and the feeling of it being real. based on some simple little algorithms that offset audio imperceptibly between your right and left ear. So your brain, when it hears something from the right side of it, the signal is going to hit your right ear a fraction of a second before it gets to your left ear. And then the left ear is going to be slightly muffled by your head being in the way of that sound. So they just did all those little things you naturally hear in real life. And it creates this subconscious understanding of the 3D world just through doing that.
Yeah, 3D audio, it blows my mind. It's something I can't wrap my brain around. It's like audio in general. It's just so intriguing to me how it works and how our brain processes it. Like, just talking with headphones on, everything is just in the center. Everything is here. With your game, you can tell if something is, you know, directly in front of you, you know, off to the left a little bit, back behind you to the left, close, near, far. It's really cool to me how audio works that way and how you made it work so well in this game.
Yeah, and that is also kind of part of the reason why I saw that there'd be novelty to this, is that I play enough games that if I'm kind of interested in something that someone else might have that interest. And when I first tried this out, I was blown away. And there's also an aspect of, usually you think if you're removing something like visuals, there's a compromise. And in this way, certainly from a marketing standpoint, there's going to be people like, what are you thinking? A video game without visuals? But in removing visuals, which could be there and could be helpful or interesting, but removing them, especially for an indie developer, the level of immersion you can achieve so quickly and without as much cost is huge, because no one's scrutinizing the hair effects or the lighting or the uncanny valley within a character model. That person next to you is your uncle, and he's whispering in your ear. Now he's walking, pacing around the room, and that's to you a person in that moment in a way that there's just less things to take you out of the experience.
It's so cool. I love it. Carnage saying that the ID stream was playing it with no video, and they thought there was something wrong with OBS.
I run into these things all the time. I never know what to say. I do have a big, if I ever stream it, I have this big banner saying all audio game, or I have a little thing saying the developer is not asleep. he's fully awake playing a video game. It's not an old man who's all tuckered out at the end of the day or something. But yeah, that's sort of a little hurdle, marketing hurdle in particular.
It was a fun stream to watch. Every like 2 minutes, someone would come in and be like, is the video broken?
Yeah.
There's just dots on the screen. Is something wrong? Timber did have a good question though, from ID team. When achievements pop, is there any way to have text to speech when achievements pop with the description of the achievement?
In Xbox, yes. They have, in their hardware, they have narrator. So if you turn narrator on, you'll also want, if anyone's doing this, who, especially if you're from the blind community, you would want to set the speech as quick as you can, because they kind of drag on into other parts of the game. If you don't have narrator on, it'll just, you hear the pop-up sound, and you can read what the achievement is. And if you have narrator on, it's the only thing that will come on voiced from the game, is the achievement. So you will hear the achievements, and it will be a robot telling you what you got.
I didn't know if maybe there would be some way to, like, for the game to detect it and have a royal voice go like, you have earned this achievement.
I didn't figure it out. There was a passing thought to that, and I realized it was a hurdle too large at the last minute to do. But yeah,
it's a good idea though.
You have slaughtered seven mice.
What? Absolutely. Yep.
And 47 gamer score. I would do that. I would give it really weird values if I had a game.
Don't I'm listen evil. To him. Nobody likes the weird values.
I thought this was an audition. I'm like, oh, you're doing the voice, aren't you? When I get this hooked up.
Hey, if you like my voice, I mean, I got nothing better to do. But I have a good friend, George. He does our intro. He's a voice actor. I should put you in touch with him.
All right, absolutely.
George is good. He's good peoples. So what else can you tell us about this game? Like, what sets it up? I can't say what sets it apart from other action games, because it's everything sets it apart from, oh geez. So how,
Oh yeah, go ahead.
How did you determine to how determined were you to get an action game working in audio only? Because it's such a cool concept.
Yeah, that was the challenge that we set out to make the whole development phase for ourselves fun. I mean, it was you know, you always like to have something. It's hardly ever fun for a developer to say, how can we do this just like these other guys, but maybe a little bit better, and take advantage of it. It's not. I mean, people do that, and it's part of the business. But it's a lot more fun when you set a challenge that sounds absurd. First of all, it was not crazy hard to do. First of all, there was already this technology, the binaural audio plugins, that was going to create 3D sound, whether I liked it or not. It was going to happen. I just played things in the world and figured out what kind of sounds were easier to navigate to, what kind of sounds were going to be great for filling in the world but not distracting from navigation. There was the whole combat system was based. It's a bit of a love letter to what I think is an interesting genre within the blind, the audio game. Genre, or audio games. But it's a slightly maligned within the blind community because there's so much of it. It's this whack-a-mole type combat where you hear something and you quickly hit it. So for me, the first challenge was kind of saying, hey, there's something novel about this for people who've never experienced this before. This idea of, I'm all over the map here, but as a person who likes games like Skyrim, but really dislike swinging a sword at something that's constantly moving a little bit. I feel like those first person games work really nice when I'm in ranged combat scenarios, but things kind of break down and I feel like I'm flailing around when playing with a controller, let's say a first person game like Skyrim. So my first thought was I was going to sort of enjoy this combat that you were kind of locked in and you could hear things and you could be very careful about your combat. You could decide when to block and when to attack. It was very much timing based. There's an element of pattern recognition. And then we threw in a bunch of random stuff to sort of warrant the use of upgrading your items. So the general, like, sticking the stuff all together effect was there were elements that felt like Mike Tyson Punch-Out or something that felt like a game that you could play perfectly. But then we just threw enough of that organic stuff in where sometimes enemies would attack almost at the same time to make it a little dirty, make it a little bit like that damage over time scenario you get like in a Baldur's Gate where you just have to, you have a reason to buy better items and things because there's certain things you can't account for. And that's kind of what we created. And I feel like that was based on thinking of all the different things that you expect in an adventure game or an action game and making sure we could find like an audio equivalent or something analogous to some mechanic that you would expect in these games. So for the blind community, we'd be saying, hey, there are a lot of things about one of these fully formed action adventure games that you're going to experience when playing this game. And then for the sighted community, I'm introducing them to the novelty of something that I think is kind of interesting, trying to fix as many of the complaints people have about the genre, the whack-a-mole combat genre. So that was a big, weird, long-winded explanation of that, but that's essentially what we set out to do.
I like the description of whack-a-mole gameplay. I enjoyed whacking the moles in the game, and I appreciate that you made it more complex than just hitting a stick in a direction. You added in blocking, you added in, you know, winding up an attack, you added crossbows. I mean, you could have taken the easy way out and just had standard hit in this direction. And it's a lot more than that, and it's a lot more involved, and it rivals some normal visual action games with how complex the combat can be.
Yeah. And if you feel that way, I've succeeded on some level, I guess, because that was the big question that we had is what level of complexity do we have to hit to make it resonate with people? And they say that was good. And what are the pitfalls with making it overly complicated or having something be confusing? And that's probably the thing we wrestled with the most is there are certain things we didn't take it quite as far as we wanted to initially, because we realized it's just not, there's certain elements that are not there yet. The biggest one being, there's only three slots enemies can stand in. They don't appear behind you. Just trying to be nice to people. They don't go between slots. So they're either on the right, the center, and I didn't put a slot in between that, mainly because, people hear binaural audio a little bit differently. And even if one person has a very precise idea of where something is, sometimes people hear it a little differently. And the other thing too is, if you're not looking at your controller or you can't look at your controller, people have a different idea in their head of what straight up is.
Yeah.
When you're not, like, you have to look down. And of course, in a visual game, you're going to see the sword swing out and you're going to see precisely that, oh, that sword's is 40 degrees to the right there. That's not straight. Well, in this game, you don't know that. So we had to simplify that. But I do have a design of especially with maybe head tracking, of doing more things like that. And the other big thing I'd love to do is have more fluidity between, ranged and combat and fighting, where you have more control over when you switch. So you could potentially run around with a bow for larger parts of the game if you wanted to.
So you mentioned head tracking. What all platforms is this game available on right now?
Oh, right. None with head tracking. So I don't wanna, yeah. We did run it on a Oculus, and it actually, just with the controller sitting there, but having that little addition of turning your head, it's pretty compelling. But that is not happening yet. It's PC and it's Xbox One right now.
All right. Is there any plans to bring it to more platforms?
Not right this minute. I'm trying to recover from 5 years of development and being an indie game developer and working on another project, by the way. But I really want to let this sit for a little bit. Get more feedback from a larger audience. I got a lot of feedback from my 150 to 200 testers within the blind community, who have been with this game for a long time, and sort of sit with that information and think about where, you know, how I'd want to expand this or do more with this, which would include potentially localization or potentially going to another console platform, because the novelty seems to be interesting on the console. I didn't know how that would do, but so far there seems to be interest on playing the game on the Xbox One or the new Xboxes. And what was the other? Oh, an Oculus. And just an obvious, from a technical standpoint, I think it's something I'd just like to try and see if it's not too hard to do, because I think it'd be a cool experience.
I could see this doing well on PlayStation VR.
Yeah. And then PlayStation also has their VR thing too. So yeah. Yeah. Do you know anyone there? Should I?
No, I don't know anyone.
No, you don't. Okay. All right.
One thing that I wanted to ask is, this is not the first game that we have seen that has a blind female protagonist, but in the beginning, the game mentions that the character has a cane, and it reminded me of Perception, where you use the character's cane to tap out to kind of get an idea of where things are at, and then you get a flash across the screen. Did you consider integrating anything like that in, or were you just strictly audio only? And what did you have, like, any other thoughts of how you could integrate her cane usage into the game?
Yeah, we did. We actually, early on, we called it caning, although that would have been misleading, where there was an element of navigation or knowing where enemies are by holding out your sword, or early on your cane, to know that, oh, this enemy is in the right, because it ticks against their armor. And then I think just the speed of the game kind of had that be not terribly relevant at a certain point. I kind of ran this by members of the community, especially people that are closer to me in development. And there were certain things I wanted the characters, disability to kind of wash away very quickly. So you're not mistaken. There's a reason why maybe I mentioned the cane at the beginning. I think she mentions it in another place in the game. But ultimately, you should probably forget about the character's blindness within the first hour of playing the game. And then certainly the character should not be defined by that. And I think she becomes defined as a princess and a leader and as a swordsman. And I think that's another conscious reason why I didn't have too many mechanics that were about navigating. Like she didn't literally have like a seeing eye dog or used a cane to navigate. And to me, that was part of the from a sighted player's point of view, part of the what is it? The transformative, like the, you know, when you play a game, you want to be someone you're not in a way. And for the sighted community, there was an aspect of Alex's comfort with just walking around in public, without worrying about bumping into things and, or people. That is an experience that is shared within the blind community, because you do get very comfortable with that. And, that was kind of part of what I wanted people to experience with Alex. And then at the same time, Alex is all these other things. I wandered into some thought here. Did I answer the question?
Yes, you did. It's
fine. Okay.
Good. Yes. We love it when people go on tangents.
Oh, good. Good.
Well, that kind of leads me into another question of, you know, did you have any fears or concerns about being a sighted person creating this game for people with a disability?
Yes. I think initially, the whole endeavor, I came at it quite honestly in that I wanted to make an audio game, an all audio game, for reasons that were not initially accessibility. And I think what comforted me was when I went to the CNIB and started making friends in the community, there was, first of all, a huge amount of goodwill that nobody questioned me being there and doing this. So I took that as a good sign. That was my first thought. And having partners from beginning to end, I don't know, I felt I was in good hands. Again, the larger community, at least the group that were on audiogames.net, which was kind of the site for people looking for audio-based games, most of the people that came in to help me develop the game were there. I did get a sense in all the forums that I was welcome to do this. I did get a lot of warnings about tropes, like the blind protagonist trope is somebody who is playing a game and is blind is less likely to say, oh, that's novel. I'm playing a blind character in an audio game. They see the trope and also see it as something a sighted developer might think of first. I thought it was an interesting character, and I still like this character, and I like what we did with them. And the main caveat was like, absolutely do this, but make sure this person's not defined by her disability, that there's a depth to her character. And as a writer, I would hope I would have done that anyway, but it was certainly, it was a challenge. I'm like, okay, I have to get that right. And then the other aspect of that is the idea of follow-up. I probably wouldn't pick a blind character, for a follow-up to this game. I would still probably include people from like the characters that I created in that to be part of the world. That was the other interesting comment I got is, people who are not as familiar with games in general, within the community, who are coming to play sessions to try out a game for the first time, which by the way was a super cool thing. Oh, wow. Someone's first video game experience is my game right here. Was that, they'd have, by and large, they had a very different feeling about the blind protagonist and saw it as a cool moment of representation and were not as aware of the tropes that were already in these games. So there was still that in the back of my mind that there is getting that character right still had value, I think. Even though I had stumbled into a trope which I guess I was just advised on being cautious about, but was encouraged to go ahead with. So, I mean, I hope I've done well by that.
Paul, what's your verdict?
I think you did a fantastic job.
Oh, good.
I mean, honestly, I really think you did well as far as just being sensitive to the condition that you were trying to portray and making a game that's accessible to the community it's targeted for, but also providing an inside look as to what it's like for people who are on the outside of that community. The reviews online, both sighted and by blind people, have been incredible. The reception seems to be really good, and I think you got a winner on your hands.
Yeah, I hope. Gosh, I hope so. And the one thing I will say about like what is this game like? Who is it for? I guess is the question. I think of target audience, like, because that's what you say when you're mm-hmm. running a business. But certainly, there's an aspect I wanted to do right by a community. I wanted to make sure that this was accessible to that community in particular. But at the same time, the game is, there's more people in the sighted community are going to play this game. And in a weird way, I realized at the end of it, it came a while before I realized it. Was that I just made a game with a community, largely for another community. The blind community helped me make this game. They were my main focus testers, my main design, like the design feedback I got, not just accessibility, but design of the game, what was going to be fun and feel good. That came from that community. And the people playing it are largely going to be in the sighted community. And I hope that that means I'm exposing people to just an interesting type of gameplay, and it's better for having worked with a community that knows that genre, I guess.
Cole, any other questions?
No.
I don't want to step on your toes.
You're good.
Every time I was going to say something, you would chime in, so
better make sure. Well, I had things to talk about.
Which is good. I like when you have things to talk about. That's fun.
Yeah. Like I'm a co-host.
Yeah. Crazy how that works out. Oh man. So Dave, when you're not working on the Veil, what are you playing? What are you enjoying?
Oh gosh. I had this question a few weeks ago and nothing changed. The answer was I have been making a game, therefore have not been playing a game. I have a family, so my family generally comes first in gameplay. So, in truth, I've been playing Stardew Valley, the 4-player co-op version with my family, which I had played Stardew Valley and then played it again in this mode. And I loved it. So that is what I'm playing. And I have been putting off playing a game called A Plague's Tale. I'm sure you've heard of it, because I know it does narrative and emotion very well, from what I understand. And I didn't want to be, I didn't want to feel bad about my own game. So I wanted to play this, but I'm like, I'm not playing this until I'm done my game. Even if I could draw some inspiration from it, because I felt, seeing what they're doing, I know it's a AAA type thing, but they're doing a lot of the similar things, I think, in trying to hit a bar of emotion and that sort of stuff. So I will start playing that game, but I haven't played a minute of it yet.
Cole, you like that one, don't you?
Mm-hmm. I did. It's wonderful.
Okay. Well, I'm excited for it anyway.
You have a sequel coming, too.
You're going to enjoy it, yeah.
Speaking of sequels, is any thoughts to a sequel for The Veil, or is this a standalone story and then move on to a new project?
We left it a little bit open at the end for maybe that purpose. But that's a great question. I think it's partly its reception. I really have to look at what people think of this game. But I think within accessibility, like, where do I take accessibility another step? Because it's with me now. I can't get it out of my head as something that even an indie developer can make strides to improve. I do have this thought of doing another game in this world, but having visuals. Which is one thought. And then the other one is to kind of blow out the mechanics of combat, which I kind of like and know I could improve. And maybe the next thing is kind of like I kind of feel like, if anything, there's going to be a project that I work with the community and build out in little pieces and maybe make little games like Arena Fighters or something like that with this sort of mechanic. I am working on another game as a writer and a designer, a sci-fi game, which is narrative driven, which I hope at some point we can incorporate, some of the lessons we learned in this game towards making it more accessible to more people as well. So that's unannounced, but it's hopefully in the next year I'll be talking about that game.
Oh, when you're ready to talk about it, hit us up. I'd love to have you back on and chatting about
retro sci-fi. That's what I'll.
Oh, Cole, it's retro. Can you handle retro?
I'm out.
No.
Retro and sci-fi.
I should say it's retro futurism themed sci-fi. Not helping. What else can I do? What else can I throw in here?
Tell me it's a tower defense.
No, it's got a dog, cats. I don't know.
Okay, like dogs and cats.
There we go. Okay.
Does it have cats?
No.
Oh.
Oh no.
Yes, you're adding a cat.
Yeah, I know. I just realized if my producers and the other developers are listening, they're going to be like, yeah, not going to be happy. Anyway. Yeah,
just add a cat. Make sure you could pet it. Give it an achievement. Yeah. You're set.
I'm set, yeah.
We don't ask for much. Don't make the achievement odd numbered, though. I don't care what Joe tells you.
Do it. Do like a 37-pointer.
What is the theory behind that?
Oh, people hate them.
Yeah, we just prefer it to end in 5 or 0.
Gotcha.
Because I recently hit 500,000, and because Joe gave me a game to review that fucked up my end number and had odd number achievements, I hit 500,017.
Yeah. Do you insist on hitting exactly a round number when you're pumping gas into your car?
I don't drive. My husband does because I'm disabled. But every time I give him grief all the time because he'll pump $30.01. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing with your life? You're almost 40. Get it together.
Fuck havoc. Here comes the Southern rage.
It's true. The more I think about it, the angrier I get, and my redneck will start falling out. Held her in all day. It's getting hot, and I'm tired. Struggle's real.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, geez. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Dave, is there anything that you wanted to talk about with the game that we didn't bring up?
That's a question I should always be prepared to answer. let me think. No, I think you guys did a great job of covering it. I think because the focus was on advocacy and or at least aspects of the community I was making the game with, I think I covered most of the things I tend to, you know, bring back. I'm trying to think if maybe there's a question about the game now that we missed, something essential. One thing I'll say, if I haven't said this already, is anybody wondering what is compelling about this experience? I guess I'd say it's the intimacy of it. It's the idea that combat is very close, that you're listening to people around you breathing and taunting you, cutscenes are very close. Your companions are whispering in your ear and that sort of thing, and it makes the world that this game kind of paints is kind of the opposite of what you might get in a big epic experience in terms of a large world, the idea of having big vistas to see or a horse to ride miles and miles, this beautiful terrain. It takes that medieval world and makes it intimate and again, close. So you're hearing smaller details in the world that I think would probably get missed or ultimately underrealized in most games because of, visual fidelity. You tend not to make models at super high resolution up close because it's costly in the engine. So I don't have to worry about that. So
one of my favorite moments was when Alex asked Shepard to describe the view, and he said a color, and she said, I can't imagine colors. And that was such a nice little touch to her character development.
Yeah, those are the moments that, again, I would never, ever want this game to be seen as in any way a simulation of what it would be like to have a disability. That's a lived experience that you can't simulate. But those are the types of moments that makes just remind you of just some realities of people's lives and stuff, and adds a little layer to her character. But yeah, that's the stuff. I hope I have enough of it in there.
Cool. Well, it has been awesome having you on. It has been a fun chat. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with some more show. We have a party cast to take care of. Cole, you're sticking around for that, right?
Yep. Computer willing.
Like we're recording that in 8 days from now.
Yeah. Computer willing.
Yeah, computer willing. Dave, where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
Yeah, we have a website, Falling Squirrels, the company. So fallingsquirrel.com. I wasn't smart enough to make my own veil page. So it's fallingsquirrel.com/theveil or something to get the actual company page. But, we're on Steam, and, itch.io. Yeah, that's where you can sort of track the community and stuff. And that's where you can also get the game. So that's usually what people say, right? Those things.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's on Xbox. And it's how on much Xbox. Is it?
Oh yeah, of course. It's $19.99 American. And then that changes depending on where you live. I'm in Canada, so it's about four different prices, I think, here.
Oh man. Well, again, it's been awesome having you on the show. Like I said, we're gonna take a quick break, listen to some music. We will be back with more show. Dave, it's been awesome having you on. Do you have any final words to end the interview?
No, just that I'm gonna try to find some cake flavored Mountain Dew now that I know about it. That's all I got.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to Dave Evans of Falling Squirrel for coming on and chatting with us about the Veil. Cole, did you have fun with that one?
I had a good time.
That was a really good chat and a really, really interesting game.
Really was.
So we
have your word for it.
Yeah, Tim will take our word for it. Pernell will also take our word for it. How are you guys doing?
I'm not dead, so let's get this party started.
It's kind of where I'm at, too. Yeah. It's already been a long week.
Pernell, you would be excited. I am drinking one of my Mountain Dew Cake Smash.
You'd be excited, I guess, because I was just looking at their website 5 minutes before joining this call. So,
is it good?
It is. It is.
Like, is it worth what you paid for it?
It's not worth the $30 I paid for it, but it's actually really, it's like a vanilla float, creamy citrus. It's really, it's overused, but it's unique and it's good.
I love citrus and I love like vanilla float type flavors, but I don't think you've got me with this one.
If they mass marketed it, I would say buy it. But since they don't mass market it,
like,
don't go spending crazy amounts.
Maybe.
But they also, the one I was looking at was an, what was it called? Oh, it was a flaming hot Mountain Dew.
Yeah, I'm not sold on that one.
That's the one I want. So
you want the flaming hot?
Of course.
Why do you want flaming hot Mountain Dew?
Because I don't have to enter a contest for it, and I can just buy it if their website works.
There.
Number one wants to try that one, too.
But that's pretty much why I am with it, so we will see.
Well, hopefully it's more available than Cake Smash was, because Cake Smash sold out pretty much instantaneously both times that they put it up for sale, and it's just been secondhand market. Yes.
Actually, maybe that's what happened with Flamin' Hot, because their website, when you click on the buy option or whatever, takes you to like a dude's not here or something. Like, it's like an error, which implies either that they didn't set it up yet or they sold through it. And they don't know how to put up a splash saying we're sold out. You would think a freaking company like Mountain Dew could get some decent web developers in there to actually do a good job of it.
Yeah, you would think so. But Tim, how was your week?
I don't want to talk about it. That's how my week was.
You just want to get to review? Should we just
I spent last night fucking biting through my tongue as anti-maskers spouted bullshit and conspiracy theories at a hapless board of education because, you know, it's the lowest form of government, but it's the one they have access to. So they're just going to let it rip.
And you were at one of the ones that had the people busting their acting stupid.
Yeah, it's my job to be there, unfortunately. But yeah, it's man, do not recommend.
Did anybody cause any like actual altercations, or was it just like a bunch of dipshits being loud squawking?
Nobody had to be forcibly removed this time around, or any previous time around. I think they're it was just like at a certain point I had to just like completely disassociate myself from the proceedings, like mentally, so that I could make it through the night without causing an incident myself, you know. So
I believe it. Because by the way, did you know? I mean, vax people can transmit the virus too. So what's the point of getting it, right?
Oh my god!
Don't make me come
so
through this internet, Purnell.
We're going to straddle you.
Somebody told me I was abusing my kids by having two of them vaccinated.
People are fucking dumb.
Sending them to school and homeschooling was abuse because I was raising them to be paranoid. And I'm like, you're the one sitting here freaking out over a shot in the arm that 2 million people have had, or 200 million some odd people have that issue. So, like, maybe I'm not the paranoid one here.
Yeah, it really boils down to the fact that there's a lot of dumb fuckers who don't understand the concept of critical thought in this country. And I've reached the point where I don't care about any of them, because to do so would put me in an even worse state than I'm already in. So I was on TMG, too many games, and they're trying to do their convention soon. And they recently changed their policy to, you know, say, you know, masks for everybody, because you know, people were complaining about the idea that they had the sheer thought to think that trusting individuals, especially in the gaming community, to be honest about being vaccinated, to say not wear a mask had to be one of the dumbest trusts I've heard of in ages, is like, no, you know. So they agree, you know, no, we're going to let everyone's required to wear them regardless of status. And people were doing their thing. And a friend of mine made a joke that I thought was funny. And then someone followed up on it, and I just responded with, you know, as a joke about wearing pants, you know, the idea of like, I can't wear pants there or whatever, something like that. And I was like, I think not having a no pants policy is potentially less dangerous than a no mask wearing policy. Just saying. And the guy goes, why? But we're all vaxxed. And I was like, I'm not even going to respond because you're dumb. I'm not going to waste the effort. I'm done wasting the effort. I don't deal with idiots anymore. It's not worth my effort. It's just not worth it to me.
So is there a pantsless convention?
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Oh, yeah.
And those are in Vegas.
there was a Jeep convention at the Smokies where we went on vacation this weekend, and that might as well have been a pantsless convention.
Only the best conventions are pantsless conventions. But
it was also mostly maskless, and I was very stressed out.
Can you imagine how many of those, you know, don't mask my kids people, or don't mask me, I do what I want, I'm free. How many of them would freak the fuck out if a group of people just started walking around the streets naked, like, I'm free, I can do this, right? It feels good.
My body, my choice.
Yeah.
My
The My Body by Choice is one of the dumbest fucking things either. It's like, do you not even grasp the concept of words? Like, you just want to say it because you hate abortion so much. That's the only reason you say it, because you don't even understand the fucking concept of it all. We live in a society. Like, again, people are fucking dumb. And if they can't even understand what the meaning is behind a phrase that's been in existence for decades, I'm fucking tell them. It's like, I'm not here to explain shit to you. You have access to the internet, the largest collective of human knowledge
that's
to ever
not
exist.
A good point anymore with how much disinformation's on the internet. Saying that you have access to it is just as much a negative as it is a positive, because there's so many stupid people out there who believe the stupid shit. Like, there's still people who believe the Onion. Like, what the fuck?
But that goes back to the critical thinking element, though. It's like, I can't fix stupid people. If a person is dumb enough to not acknowledge or realize that the Onion is satire, or that I can I'm not going to trust an eye doctor to give me advice on viral transmissions. Like, if people are that dumb, which they are, by the way, I don't give a shit enough to even try to get through to them. They lost it on their own. They had as many years to get educated as I have, more or less, or they have access to as many unless someone dies early, God rest their soul. And I'm not going to sit there and subject myself to try to educate them if their actual educators couldn't do it for them. They're just fucking dumb and lost, and I don't care. But
you know what people should trust, though, on the internet?
Our reviews.
Absolutely.
GG.
GG indeed. So are we getting right to these?
Yes.
All right. We would have. Let's do it now, though.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Psychonauts 2, developed by Double Fine Productions, published by Xbox Game Studios. A Game Pass code for this game was provided by Xbox for the review. So Purnell got to extend his Game Pass subscription. It released August 25th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, Windows 10, and Steam for $59.99. Raz, trained acrobat and powerful young psychic, has realized his lifelong dream of joining the international psychic espionage organization known as the Psychonauts. But these super psychic spies are in trouble. Oh, my God. Psychic super spies are in trouble. Their leader hasn't been the same since he was rescued from a kidnapping, and what's worse, there's a mole hiding in headquarters. Purnell, tell us about Psychonauts 2.
Well, the lead off on this statement, there's a 2 after this title because it's a sequel. With that said, however, the game does start out with a pretty decent, you know, voiced, you know, catch up for both the first game and the VR sequel that came after that,
which I had completely forgotten about.
Exactly. It's like, in a sense, like I didn't forget about it, but I also never touched it. And I can honestly say that I don't feel like I missed anything. And they explained enough to get me right on board. Hell, they explained enough to get you on board from the first game. But I will say, even before starting the sequel's review, that while you don't need to play the first game, I still recommend you do, because it's a lot of fun and it holds up despite being released in like 2005. So now if that's out of the way,
Psychonauts 2. I think it's on sale for $1 on Xbox.
Shit. Well, there you go. Buy the damn game. It's fun. And you get to meet Gogolore. I'm not going to tell you who that is. So the sequel, however, in a humorous manner, picks up days after Rhombus of Ruin and the original Psychonauts game, and they describe it as such, despite the fact that we've all been waiting 16 years. But the game starts out with Raz joining up with the, you know, basically getting back to the quote-unquote mother lobe after a pretty cool introductory training stage, only to learn that he is actually not a Psychonaut yet. He is more of an quote-unquote intern, which you would think might lead to some, you know, as being an annoying plot point, but actually leads to some nice dialogue, some cool character introductions in the form of the other interns on the team, and a directive for the narrative to lead you down a nice directive. This game, despite being heavily story-based, is, in its at its core, a collectathon platform adventure game, where Raz is exploring a variety of environments, primarily being the mother lobe itself, which is the headquarters of the Psychonauts, and eventually the campgrounds and forested area that exists around the mother lobe. But he also explores the basic print, the main concept of this game, which is the inner mental workings of different people that he comes across. And he has to explore all these different environments in order to progress along the narrative of figuring out, again, one, who the mole is, and two, basically figuring out the Psychonauts mole and also how to deal with the evil that has become known to be terrorizing the Psychonauts, which I won't spoil because I think it's kind of cool how they start bringing it up. It's like a woo thing. But
what does honestly, that sound again?
Woo! But the game itself, it still holds up to being a great deal of fun. Raz is capable of a number of things, many of which he carries over from the first game. And in a cool twist, during said aforementioned intro stage, he is quickly given all of his old skills back. So it's almost like you're picking up right where you left off. He can do things such as levitation, which involves him running around on top of a mental ball so he can roll around on the ground and roll over dangerous objects and get a speed boost. And you can also use it to kind of hover or levitate. He gets pyrokinesis for burning things, clairvoyance for popping into people's brains, and a number of other abilities, all of which are used for puzzle solving and land traversal. He also, of course, is an acrobat because lol. So as a result, he is also capable of jumping, double jumping, and a variety of like acrobatic type maneuvers, such as like wall grabs and, you know, shimmies. Sniffles?
Yeah, my nose is a little runny. I'm over here. I'm just trying to clear.
He's doing cocaine, kids.
Oh, well, that's all making that big SNL money. He's going to do that. But so basically that's how the traversal works too. And this is basically the primary aspect of how you'll get around in playing much of the game. And your actual goals will involve basically just progressing through narrative arcs. Sometimes you'll have to help someone solve a problem in their mental scape. So that'll take you into their world where combat will generally ensue in exploration. And combat in this game is a gem. Because in the previous game, you primarily just punched guys until they fell over in the form of sensors. It was usually the enemy of choice in that game. But there were also like fish monsters and various things, but mostly sensors. In this game, they've really shaken up the enemy verse. And they're all based off of mental concepts, which I think is amazing. You have self-doubt, you have, you know, censorship, like I mentioned before, you know, anxiety, panic attacks. They all come in the form of like monsters. And they are actually, their behaviors are surprisingly appropriate for what they're considered to be. And the combat requires, it requires you in many ways to utilize the multitude of Raz's abilities to fight effectively, such as grabbing Regret's item from Regret's hands and then throwing it at the Regret to knock it out of the sky, stuff like that. So it's not just wham, wham, thank you, ma'am. It's also power, bower, don't be sour. It's a good time. and honestly, the combat's great. The worlds are thematic and amazing in their design and concept in this game. They're all pretty imaginative. Even something that would seem mundane, like a hospital, is turned on its head and made pretty damn visually amazing and appealing. The characters are all well written and humorous. This is one of those games where you'll be talking to characters, NPCs no less, outside, like after every chapter is done, you'll want to talk to the characters again because they're saying new things. And in many cases, they have their own personal narratives running throughout the game. So, and the writing is so good that you'll just want to hear what the hell they have to say. It is really choice. It's a very good time. I've been waiting for this game since the release of the first game. It was one of my most requested and wanted games since then. Like, it's amazing how this year, three of my most desired games over the last 20 years are all coming out in the same year. It's fucking amazing. But
what are the other two?
Shin Megami Tensei 5 and The World Ends With You sequel.
Oh. Uh-huh.
So all three of those bad boys, I get in the same year. It's freaking overload, really. But I'm not complaining because
this you don't play any of your games anyways.
That is true, except for the ones that I want to play. So
these shiny few.
Oh, trust me when Joe can vouch for me when I say this. He offered me this game, or at first he wasn't going to give it to me because he's like, well, you already have access to it by Game Pass. I'm like, you may as well give it to me because whatever else I'm going to review is going to suffer because I'm going to be playing this one. So essentially, he was doing the show a service by letting me review this game. Because yeah,
Cole and Jacob were going to review it on Thursday, and you're like, no, I'm going to review it.
Exactly.
To be fair, though, the same thing happened with me in Hades. I was like, I'm not going to be playing anything but Hades. You might as well
Yeah. Yeah. Just put my name down on the sheet because it's happening whether you like it or not. So
exactly. I didn't like there have been, even after I did the review, there were other games that suffered because I was like, I'm sorry, I still played Hades way too much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's a testament to a great game, because I will say this, we review a lot of games on this show, and every game I review, I'm 100% honest in my feelings and opinions on that game. With that said, despite the fact that I have said opinions, there's obviously
going to be bought and paid for.
Bought and paid for.
My bad.
Companies own my ass. But that said, jokes aside, despite the fact that I'm 100% honest with my reviews, there are still going to be games that when you have to compare them against other games that I review are going to take the cream of the crop title. And they're going to be the ones that I want to take the majority of my free time, limited free time, and play. Psychonauts is one such game that makes that cut. This game is the shit. and it was worth the wait. It was worth the time. And I am genuinely 100% glad that Microsoft cut them the check to say, hey, you can afford to make this game in.
Well, before you give a verdict, Tim.
It was crowdfunded.
Tim, what are your thoughts on the game?
Oh, I think it's terrible. No, I'm kidding. No, my problem has been that, like, my child, I started playing it in front of my child, which was, you know, on purpose. And now I can't play it without him present. Like, I tried to, and he was in the next room fidgeting with his Pokemon cards. He's like, you can't play Psychonauts 2. I'm not there. Yeah, he was very, well, I had to wait about 15 minutes, and then he appeared. Yeah, he was very into the weird and gross tooth nightmare that opens the freaking game. Yeah, I just wish I wish that I had had more time to play it at this point, because it seems really good. It's you know, Purnell touched on a lot of things, but there's a lot more he could have touched on, like the. The world design, because, you know, you, as you mentioned, yeah, you're jumping into people's brains, but it's when you jump into someone's brain that things get really interesting in the way that it kind of manifests that character's personality and their, you know, hopes, fears, dreams, et cetera, and how that is then folded back onto the game mechanics. So you get some really creative, interesting worlds to explore. They're big on mashing things up. It's like the first couple levels, like one is an office building that suddenly has teeth everywhere. One is a hospital that suddenly is turning into a casino. And then on top of that, like the writing in this game is hilarious.
Phenomenal. This
game, it is so fucking funny. Like you'll just be standing or like it is worth it to just stand around in an area and listen to characters just talk, because they're not, they have tons of lines. They're not going to repeat themselves. you know, Raz will talk to himself sometimes. I just went through a sequence, in the aforementioned, casino hospital where like there's two very rich parents, though they don't like to talk about how much money they have.
Rich kid.
Yeah, that were they're trying to get a but they're trying to get a baby, but to get a baby they had to strike they had to win a rigged roulette game, and just like the shit they say is insane and appalling and hilarious. Like that in particular, I mean, it was literally just the most recent part I played, but it was so fucking funny.
I did love those two.
Like,
that's yeah, the that writing, entire world.
Yeah, the writing in this game is great and really clever, and the worlds are great and really clever. Like, really, my only and graphically, I think it looks really nice. Like, it's not the tippy top of the line, but you know, it's the art, and the art looks really good. My only real beef is that, like, with the amount of badges you have, I wish you could just like switch between sets. Like at the touch of a button rather than having to equip them. Cause it was like, as soon as I, you know, you start out with like, you know, levitation and the psi beam and incinerate and another
levitation
one. That's
just be a button, by the way. That yeah, even
exactly,
be a badge.
Exactly. It's like, you need that thing like for everything. And then it's like, as you start to get more abilities, it's like, I mean, you don't need clairvoyance that often. And by the way, clairvoyance is also hilarious with how they play with how other characters perceive Raz. So it's always worth doing that and having a laugh. But yeah, that's it. I just wish that like I could switch between my powers faster so I can just play the game more instead of have to go into the menu to re-equip powers. Like they really did it with this one. I mean, I enjoyed the first one, but with the first one, the standout was always kind of like the middle three stages of that game that I thought were phenomenal, and kind of the rest were delicious. Okay. The undersea one and the Milkman is an all-time classic video game level, and the Spanish painting one were amazing. But like so far, like everything is hitting in this game from what I've played, and I just wish I'd seen more, but it seems really great.
Cool. I do have to ask this to you guys since you've played it too, though, because this is worth me asking, because I'm wondering if it's my system / or my hard drive. What is the loading times like for you?
It's not standing out to me as being too terribly bad, but that's because there is another game that I played that had really noticeably bad lag time or load times.
In that case, it may well be either the hard drive or my system, because to get into the main game proper, I actually heated up and then consumed my entire dinner. Though, admittedly, that dinner was vegetable medley. To fight that fact, I still was able to do both of those things while it was still loading. And then I pressed start and had to load up the actual mother lobe.
Yeah, so, that seems like it might be a you problem. That seems excessive from,
That's why I was expecting it to be, but that's why I wanted to ask it and not make it a review component.
Yeah, yeah.
I might need to actually update my hard drive or, I don't know, get a Series X specifically to play my Xbox.
You've been mentioning load times a lot in games recently. I'm starting to think it might be your system going.
Yeah, it's one of the original Xbox models, honestly. It's not even an Xbox. What was the updated one they did for the big? Was it Xbox?
They had the 1S and the 1X.
Yeah, it's not even a 1X. It was just this is just the original model.
You have the VCR model.
Yeah, that's the one. So
yeah, we got to get you upgraded.
And I have the Target credit for it, so it's not even an issue. So it's like finding it. but despite my general issues with my loading, the game is phenomenal. It gets the sealest of approvals that I can seal on an approval. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, keep giving Double Fine your money because they fucking deserve it. This is a quality product.
Now, here's a question for you. If you're a PS5 owner, what do you do with this game?
Well, you can't play it. It's not on there yet, right?
It's on PS4, but there's no native PS5 version.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say based off of like how I'm experiencing it now, you probably don't really. I mean, just like how like I have a friend who's like really into like Xbox games that are on the Series X. They have like 120, like you know 1020p, you know animation
the
and stuff like that.
And the hertzes and
yeah, all that stuff. I've never cared about that stuff. Not saying it's not impressive because it is very impressive, but personally, I've never cared about those things. It's a matter of does the gameplay carry the experience in a way that you can feel like you're having a good time? And in that case, I would say if you don't have the cream of the crop console on an Xbox and you are running on a PS4, then just get it on the PS4. It's not a big deal. You'll still have a great time playing it. I'm playing it on a base model series Xbox. I mean, so you hear my experience. I mean, you'll still have fun with it. It's not going to change a thing. With that said, if you have a Series X, why not utilize the thing?
Very true. I just know there's a lot of PS5 people who are pissed off that there's not a PS5 native version. I mean, they could still play the PS4 version on the PS5. It's just there's no native PS5 version. Like, I don't know if they're mad that they don't get a few extra frames that are on the Xbox version or if they don't get that trophy stack.
I think it's just another reason to complain when there's no real need to be. I mean, I get it. It would look a little nicer. Maybe it would load a little better. I don't freaking know. But it doesn't hurt the game experience in the slightest. And if it's the difference between you getting a chance to play the game versus not playing the game at all, play the damn game. It's not rocket science.
Works for me. All right. Yeah, next game to talk.
It's like play the game or don't, loser.
Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is Prinny Presents NIS Classics Volume 1, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released August 31st on the Switch for $39.99. For the first time ever, Phantom Brave, the Bermuda Triangle remastered, and Soul Nomad and the World Eaters are coming to Nintendo Switch with unique gameplay mechanics, memorable characters, and upscaled artwork. This is a must-have for strategy RPG fans and NIS fans alike. Tim, tell us about your time with this one.
Is it though? I will not. Like, it's well. So it's funny that, like, you know, it's like, oh, I mean, I guess the Phantom Brave must be the Wii version ported up. But yeah, when they say upscaled sprites, it's like, what's so? What is this game? All right, yeah, let's get into it. So this is Prinny Presents NIS Classics Volume 1. So it's taking, and presumably there's going to be a Volume 2, which might be better. But, you know, so they NIS list, you know, released quite a bit of stuff on the PS2. And these are two of those PS2 games, Phantom Brave and Soul Nomad. And man, they are It is, they put, made two PS2 games run on Nintendo Switch. You know, they say, you know, upscaled and up this and up that, but man, it's for me, just like playing it, I'm like, this just seems like the PlayStation 2 games straight up. I had a really hard time detecting any kind of a difference between this and the PS2 versions. Which I played Phantom Brave back in the day, and I never quite got to Soul Nomad, because I think that was like a bit of a later on PS2 release. Like, in playing them, the only thing that like jumped out at me as something that might have been touched on was it looked like the text was sharper. But otherwise, it's like, you know, you load into a screen, and then you pick which game, and then it loads in the game, and then you are presented with the menu screen, you know, of the game as it was on the PS2. So there's no, like, really, there's no kind of fancy bells and whistles on these games. It's just like, oh, here's the PS2 game. Like, they're not even like formatted for widescreen. You really? Can have it fill the screen, of course, but you are then stretching the image out. Yeah. Otherwise, by default, they are 4x3 with black bars on the side. They didn't even do that. So, you know, keeping that in mind, that these are two no frills PS2 ports of, you know, some of the okayest entries in the NIS strategy game library. So to get into what they are, Phantom Brave is the brighter, lighter game of the two, which, you know, you takes place, it has a bit of a more tropical theme, I guess I'd say. Kind of the neat hook to this game is that your main character animates inanimate objects on a level and makes them into your, like, puts spirits into them, and that is how your party is formed. So putting a character into a rock gives it different stats than putting it into, like, a tree, for example. And it is weird and kind of complicated, but it's really interesting to see how that plays out. That game is not grid based. It's just kind of like you get a circle around your character, you can just move anywhere within it. You're not stuck to a grid when you're moving and positioning characters. And that game's okay. Like, I didn't it was pretty solid. I never finished it back in the day, but I played quite a bit of it. Soul Nomad is I think more interesting conceptually. It's like a little bit of like Nipponichi meets Fire Emblem, sort of, a little bit, and that, like, in as far so far as like the actual battles are playing out. So, like, you start out the game and you're in this hidden village, and you pick one of two characters, and they get inhabited by like this ancient demon, and there's this mechanic where it's like the more you draw upon the ancient demon's powers, the more control he gains over your character. But then you move out into the world and you can start recruiting more characters, and you like start assigning them to units, basically. So each one of your main character, well, so you start ending up having multiple units that you can assign characters into. So each character will, you know, kind of leader character will have his own little squad of guys behind him. So you can put your characters in those squads and, rearrange their arrangement, front, back, center, and put them in different formations, which will have different effects. And then when the battles actually play out, you're on a grid, and that's where it starts to look a lot like Fire Emblem. It's like, oh, okay, I recognize this. And you'll, you know, move your characters around, position them, with range attacks, close range attacks, and then you move up and attack the enemy, and you'll, and a animation will play or will not play if you turn it off, showing just kind of how the little battle plays out. But, you know, you're kind of maneuvering around this overworld map and making decisions about where to go, and this and that. So that game is, to me, more interesting from a mechanical perspective, but, and this is something, you know, call me a lily white snowflake if you want, but, like, in playing Soul Nomad now in 2021, and I have not played this game when it came out, I was kind of surprised that they left in the aforementioned evil demonic character just like derogatorily referring to your female companion as a retard, like, multiple times.
Oh, geez.
And it was just like, ouch, oh, geez, wow. Like, that might have, you know, not
that, that I've could ever have been updated.
That, I feel like, really could have been touched on and was, like, really put a bad taste in my mouth right off the bat. And I know that is a straight deal breaker for some people.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow, that's, you know, it, yeah, yeah. 15 years later, it's just like, you should have, if you were touching the text, if you were making any changes to this game, that would have been a great opportunity to, maybe find some more appropriate language. So that was like really shitty, to find in this game that I've kind of been like looking forward to playing for, well, meaning to get around to playing for, I guess, you know, 15 years at this point. But, yeah, so, like if you, what's up?
I was about to say the one thing I could say to go, at least he did something, at least it was along those lines, is that it's a villain saying it and he's a genuine piece of shit as a character person. So it's like, whoa, harsh words there, buddy. But since you're like, you are a piece of shit, so
yeah,
I guess you're just earning your moniker.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's the argument that would be made, is just like, oh yeah, he's being a piece of garbage. But you know, you could be a piece of garbage in other ways without being that specifically offensive to certain people.
Yeah,
you could do better, and I don't really feel like it belongs. And I really wish they had changed that. But for what you do get, it's kind of like, well, it's too. You know, decent tactical RPGs, but with very, very little, you know, frills put on them to modernize them for a modern console, which is kind of a bummer. I wish they'd done more, for sure.
Well, as it stands, it's $40 for the two games together. What do you think of it?
It's, for me personally, it's a straight up deny it. I wish they had done more. I wish they had made them look better. I wish they had edited the text in Soul Nomad to be less offensive. But, you know, it's those games on a modern console, so if you're really looking to check them out, sure, it's worth a try. I will be more interested to see, because this game is called Volume 1, I am very interested to see what a Volume 2 looks like. There was another game they made called Makai Kingdom for PS2, which is like a shitload of fun. And they also published a Vanillaware game called Grim Grimoire, which is also like, those are kind of like my preferred NIS PS2 games. So if Volume 2 is those two games, like, my God, sign me the fuck up. But these seems like kind of the lesser ones they could have put together.
I will say this, though, regarding at least Phantom Brave. So Phantom Brave originally was the game that released in the States to follow up Disgaea, which, for those in the know, Disgaea was like, this is big. Like, they've had other games prior, but Disgaea was the one that put them on the map in the States. Yeah. So Phantom Brave came at a weird time because people wanted more Disgaea, and what they got was Phantom Brave. The game, in my opinion, once I let the whole, you know, like, this isn't a Disgaea game flow out, I will say that whereas the World Eater game had, like, you know, a douchey main character and some really shitty choices of words, Phantom Brave is almost the exact opposite of that. That game has a stupid amount of heart going for it.
Yes.
And the one gripe I can see people having about it is the fact that you're, due to the whole party members timed usage system per battle, you don't get to have the whole thing where, like, one guy is just going to run the map and decimate it unless you give him some really good equipment and you're very fast. But with that said, like, I would definitely say, like, I wouldn't think of it so much as a lesser game. They did some great stuff with it, including the way you did the movement. Like, it's not tile-based. It's, like, spherical-based. They made some pretty cool decisions in that game. Like, for me, it's been one of my favorites from the NIS company before they kind of really started branching out into, like, crazier stuff. And I definitely liked it more than World Eater, but that's because World Eater is stupid complicated too. but I just wanted to give, like, that second take on Phantom Brave, because that game gets a lot of flack from a lot of general people in general, but it definitely is a lot better than they give it credit for, I personally think.
Okay, well, Pernell, let's get your opinion. At $40, is this something that you're going to drop the money on, or are you going to hold off for a sale, or what are you going to do with this game? Because I know you're going to get it eventually.
And I think it kind of ties slightly back into what Tim said, too, which is that I already owned them on the PlayStation, and they didn't add or really change anything. So for me, it's a get them when they're cheap because I can play them on my Switch. However, if I didn't own either game in any form right now, I would likely buy this because I like playing games on my Switch. The games themselves are good. And to me, it does the do in that regard. But as they also, like how Tim mentioned, if they didn't make any real changes or major updates, there's a lot of folks that will say, well, there's still PS2 games that have no fluff added. So in which case it still goes back to, okay, wait for a sale. But ultimately at the time, when the time comes and the price is right for you, I think it's a purchase.
Cool. All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is Myst, developed and published by Cyan Worlds, released August 26th.
What's this game? Never heard of it.
This unheard of indie released August 26th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows 10, and Steam for $29.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. Welcome to Myst, a starkly beautiful island eerily tinged with mystery and shrouded in intrigue. Pernell, tell us about your time with Myst.
I was very disappointed to realize this had nothing to do with Stephen King, but I digress. Believe it or not, I'm one of those people who never played or experienced anything to do with Myst, ever. Like, I knew of its existence, but never came into contact with it. Partially because, yeah, well, there's a genuine reason for it, though. I mean, this was back, and I would consider it to be early modern PC gaming. And at the time, not only did I not have a powerful PC, but I also did not like adventure games. So to me, to see Myst on the shelf was like, it's a waste of money and time. I'm not going to bother with it. But I did know that it had a lot of critical acclaim behind it. And in my current state, I like adventure games. So when Joe offered, I was like, I'd like to try this and see what all the fuss is about. And what I came away with regarding this game, well, I guess I'll talk about that in a second. So the game starts out with your character just being thrown onto an island. Get to exploring. That is genuinely the game. You eventually get some context in regards to what you're, give yourself a goal more or less by eventually coming across two books, one red, one blue. And when you open them, there is a spirit inside asking you to collect pages for the book that are hidden throughout the world of Myst. And that's your goal, per se. How is this done? Well, as you're exploring this island, you eventually come to realize a series of clues, or discover a series of clues that give you the impression that there are other worlds that are connected to this main island. And to access them, you have to solve a series of puzzles to access them and find them. The puzzles themselves, in an interesting manner, even especially for back then, but even more so now, nothing tells you this. Like, nothing tells you any of this. It's all contextual. And it's surprisingly amazing how that works, because you'll be walking, and you'll see a lever, and you'll pull the lever, and nothing will happen. And you're like, what the hell is this lever even doing here? I don't get it. So, you're like, oh, whatever. This just does nothing. And then you'll go to a room and you'll see something that represents like a calendar. You're like, okay, there's a calendar. You'll push a few buttons and nothing will happen except a thing will move. And you'll go, okay, well, I don't get it. Leave it alone. But then eventually you'll come across a thing. And I can't even describe because I feel like it's all giving away. And since the entire game is literally solving puzzles, I can't tell you the things. But you'll eventually come across an object that will give you the feeling of, wait a minute, is that a calendar? That's a date, isn't it? And then you'll run through your series of memories and go, wait a minute, I remember a thing that required me to utilize dates. And you'll go back and put that date in and something will happen. And it feels great. You
can't talk about it because it gives away the game.
It really does. Like, that's genuinely how this game works. But ultimately, the way it breaks down is you'll be in environments, first the main island, and then eventually the connected worlds once you find the way to access them. And you'll just be hit with a bunch of different places and objects and visuals that ultimately are meant to be utilized in tandem in some fashion to resolve a puzzle. And when you solve the puzzle, you'll gain access to another puzzle. And then eventually you'll come across a book page or maybe some dialogue that tells you about the people that are in those books or the history of the island. But for the most part, what this game is you isolated on a fairly quiet and magical world, walking around solving puzzles. Now, here's how I feel about this. It's weird because at its core, the idea of solving puzzles resonates well with me. I think it's a great time, and I always feel especially accomplished when I'm able to overcome something. But at the same time, if this is for people who aren't into this kind of thing per se, the narrative is very loose. There's no heavy driving force to push you along. Like, you might play a Silent Hill game, for example, and then you'll come across a room where it's like, fuck, I can't get out of this room until I solve this puzzle. But you're vested in it now. There's like creepy environment you're in. There's music playing. Figure it out. And next thing you know, you're on the internet looking up William Shakespeare plays to solve a bookstore riddle. That actually happened, by the way. In this game, it's more of a kind of go at your own pace, relax, and solve puzzles. That is a great thing if that's your cup of tea. And I know people who are like that. And in some days, I am too. But you can't come to this game expecting to be driven by a compelling story that's going to push you along and make you feel like you have to commit. This game is a game that you're going to play specifically because you like the visuals. And the visuals are really nice on this remaster.
The screenshots on the store page is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. And the sounds are great too. Like, you can hear water rippling, and like the steps you take when you go downstairs. Like, the sound effects are fantastic in this product. And every once in a while, a musical key will kick in. Like, you might be going up a cliff, and for some reason, at that moment, the sound director goes, "This will be a good time to have a sweeping score." Da-la! And you'll hear a lot of la when you go up the stairs. That's great. But, you know, for the most part, like, I mean, you're generally just solving puzzles and relaxing your way through the game, which in and of itself, in a world full of stresses and many other games where you're constantly being pressed, you know, for anxiety hits, this game hits the spot of, hey, I just want to solve puzzles and relax. Though, I will also follow up by saying, again, these puzzles aren't easy. They're all contextual. You have to pay attention. Get your cell phone camera out. Take photos of things. Write it on paper. The game has an end. Get a notepad. There's an actual photo album thing you can do in the game, but it's not enough because you can't particularly reference that while you're in the middle of solving a puzzle. So, in many cases, I genuinely took cell phone photos, used them, and then deleted them when I was done. So, in that regard, keep that in mind. Though, I will then lastly follow up by saying, this is a solved game. So, you'll never have to be truly stuck if you utilize the internet, but don't do it but so much because the entire game is the puzzles. And if you just use the internet to solve the puzzle, what the hell did you buy this for?
No.
Primarily use them when you're just so stuck that you feel like your interest is waning. That's pretty much what you use the internet for. Otherwise, play the damn game. So I guess I should wrap up my review with a general contextual statement of the game is a buy it. It holds up. Just know what you're getting into because it is still an old game running on old context and gameplay concepts. And it shows when you play. But that's a good thing if you're okay with it.
It's old school, but it's pretty.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cole, did you get to try this one on Game Pass at all? I know you were interested in it. I don't know if you had time, though, because of your weekend adventuring.
I did. I went on an adventure, and I did not get to play Myst. I have it installed. It'll probably have to wait till this weekend when I don't go on an adventure.
Yeah, sure. Next game to talk about is Recompile, developed by Phi Games, published by Dear Villagers, released August 19th on Xbox Series X and S and PS5 for $24.99, available as part of Xbox Game Pass. This atmospheric Metroidvania-inspired hacking adventure lets you take control of a semi-sapient program struggling against deletion in the sprawling 3D world of the mainframe. Recompile features intense combat, tight 3D platforming, superpowered abilities, and environmental logic-based hacking mechanic. Tim, tell us about your time with Recompile.
Oh, man. This game has so much going for it. So, yeah, it's kind of a 3D Metroidvania type deal. It looks really cool, which you could figure out if you look at a trailer. You are inside of a computer, and everything just has it's like a simple look, but it's like has, you know, very sharp, cool looking like lighting and neon details. Like your character looks like you took the dude out of Rez and then handed him a gun, eventually. And yeah, so it is big on like, okay, they put your program in there. You are trying to get inside of the supercomputer without being detected by the security. You're exploring around in a somewhat non-linear fashion, to find abilities that help you progress. And some abilities you need to progress in certain areas, like a dash. You can dash in midair. So it's like, okay, now I can clear longer gaps, and I need that to get over to this area here to find something else that lets me go to this area over here, and so on and so forth. And it just has a really nice look to it. It just looks really cool moving around. There's like cool things off in the background. The stuff you're interacting with in the foreground all looks, you know, pretty nice and sharp. It's just got a really cool ambiance to it. And yeah, like it's pretty open to explore too, which is, I don't know, a little scary, I guess. It's just like, oh God, am I supposed to be going this way? Please hold my hand more, daddy. But it's like, yeah, you can really kind of go off, in some other directions and wonder if you're headed the right way. As you find power-ups and new abilities, and then have to kind of make your way back onto the main path and explore some more. Pretty much right off the bat, they're pretty soon off the bat, the game gives you a gun to shoot enemies, security protocols that are trying to attack you. And it's, you know, the deal where you pull the left trigger and you shoot with the right trigger, and you kill enemies like that, and you'll find upgrades in different modes for that gun. Like, oh, this one's like a short range bursty burst. It's so shotgun like. It's not called that. It's called like delete or exterminate or something like that. It makes it fit in with the theme of the game. There's like a higher powered assault rifle that shoots very, very fast, but the bullets are kind of weak. So your primary mode of combat, or your only mode of combat, is shooting things. Otherwise you are jumping around the world from platform to platform, exploring around, trying to find things. There are switches basically that you'll need to hit to unlock doors to progress further. And I really thought there was gonna, because like they give you an ability early on that I thought was gonna let you hack things. And I was going to have to like figure out logic puzzles to like utilize those buttons and switches in logical ways to open doors. But they do get that to that eventually. But like early on, it just kind of works as an identifier, like, oh, this is that thing. This is that thing. But it's still a pretty straightforward hit the button. The problem one runs into with playing this game is the actual playing of this game, which is a problem.
Oh, no.
So right off the bat, there is, as of when I last played the game, there is no adjustment for the sensitivity of aiming or controlling the camera. And in a game where you have to aim to shoot enemies, that's kind of a deal breaker right there. Because the default sensitivity is much too sensitive for my tastes. See, two reviews ago, I was the sensitive one, but now this game is too sensitive for me. It's just too sensitive. Like immediately, and this is me in most games, is their default sensitivity for cameras or aiming or whatever is too much for me, and I need to slow it down or else sometimes I get motion sick. Not in this case, but in this case, I just struggled a lot with trying to track enemies that would be flying around me relatively quickly, and it's just like, and they're peppering me with shots, and sometimes there's more than one of them, and I'm having a shit time trying to aim at them because I can't customize the sensitivity to my liking. And it is just absolutely baffling that, like, it's, I cannot remember the last time I saw a game where that thing needed to be adjusted and I could not do so. Like, it might have been the PS2 era again. We're back. So that sucks. I think you have to have that if you're going to aim and shoot in your game, and that's something they could certainly patch in. But and that's a big thing right there. That makes all the combat suck right there. But also, kind of like, jumping around is also not good. It's like your jump, I feel like, goes not quite, just barely not quite as far as it needs to. Which makes you have to, like, instead of kind of naturally jumping and climbing up paths, like, I'm having to stop at every moment to readjust the camera, check my distance to make the jump. And even then, like, sometimes it seems like the edges of a platform are rounded, or they don't like, you'll start to drop off them, like, a little bit before you think you will, and then you plummet, not to your death, but to your injury, at least. And it's weird in that sometimes, you know, you'll just fall to, the levels are very vertical, that, like, sometimes you'll fall and you'll just land on a lower platform and it's like, okay, fine, I have to climb up. Sometimes, like, you will fall, you know, a ways and you'll take damage. And sometimes you'll fall a very, very, very long ways before you take damage. And then it, like, respawns you somewhere with a bit of damage off yourself. But just, like, part of the... like, what makes the game look so cool and that it's all, like, all nice and dark and shaded also makes it difficult to play, because sometimes it's just like, I a lot of times I would just fall off a platform or fall into a crack because I just didn't see it, because it was just too damn dark. It was just, like, disguised in the environment. I'd be like, ah, fuck, shit, down I go, back I come, here I am. And the levels end up being difficult to navigate. I mentioned they're very vertical, but the map is entirely two-dimensional because it is meant to look like a ASCII layout of a computer motherboard, which is nice and thematic, but it's like when you pull it up and you're trying to figure out where you are into relation to something else, and there's no verticality to it, and also it's not that detailed besides that. It's like, well, great. And it doesn't even show exactly where you are. It shows your vicinity. Like, it will, like, make, just, like,
fucking show me where I am.
Yeah, it kind of makes, and like, anytime I brought it up, it was just completely useless. And did not give me the information that I wanted. Like, I didn't have too hard a time, you know, moving myself in the right directions generally, but it definitely made things more difficult than it needed to be, and I was already not having a great time shooting things, and, you know, was having a lot of time just, like, just not having a great time jumping around. The game paces out some of the mechanics or some of the power-ups in kind of a weird way. Like, I mentioned the hacking thing. Eventually, later on in the game, you can hack things, but it comes along so far down the road that it's like, I just didn't want to deal with it at that point, and it was kind of slow to do anyway, so I just stuck to my guns per se. You think that one's bad, just wait till later. And so, yeah, it's like, there's a lot of good, cool ideas in it, but I just didn't have a great time playing it. And I know you're about to ask the question, and I will say, no, I cannot recommend this game, but if they put a god, like, instantly put a sensitivity slider in the game, and it is worth trying. That is the difference right there.
What about the fact that it's on Game Pass? Is it just...
Well, there, you guess what? You can try it on Game Pass. And if you like
that, is it worth the download? Is it worth the...
Oh, 100%. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, it's worth downloading and checking out. Because if the sensitivity aligns with what your taste and feel is for a game, like, you're good. You're good to go. That's the biggest thing. Like, I think you can overcome, like, the other stuff going on with it. But just like when the main source of combat just didn't work for me, it was just so frustrating. And just like fighting, there's especially like this one fucking enemy that flies, that zips around kind of unpredictably and peppers you with shots, that is so hard to deal with when you can't aim at it or lead your shots. And it's also, I had a tough time like knowing whether I was hitting it or not. Like, you don't really see your shots coming out of your gun very well. Like, you'll see a muzzle flash, but I had a tough time just knowing whether or not I was hitting things, even besides that. It's a bummer. I thought this game looked really, really cool. And it still does look really, really cool. It just doesn't back it up in the gameplay department yet.
Yet. So hopefully they patch it if some patches please, come along.
Sensitivity. What are you doing? Come on.
Yeah, come on. Come on, Fi Games. Get shit together. Next game to talk about is Song of Iron, developed and published by Resting Relic, released August 31st on Xbox One and Steam for $19.99. Behind you lies a trail of broken helms, shattered shields. You hold the axe of a fallen foe. Worn and dented, it will suit its purpose. What lies ahead is still a mystery. Your goal is not. Tim, what's the goal?
Your goal? Okay, so the game opens with you mourning your... Let me take a couple steps back here. So this game is a Viking-themed kind of left-to-right scrolling adventure action-y game, which I thought was going to be a little more puzzly, but was not so much, but that's fine. Like, if you, like, looking at the trailers, I was like, this kind of looks like a Viking Norse mythology-themed version of Inside, and it kind of is. And that's cool, because Inside was fun to play, and this game is also fun to play. So you start out mourning the death of your lover on a funeral pyre, and then there's a brief flashback to your village getting attacked, which serves as your tutorial, and you being introduced to the things you can do in this game, which is, you know, jump, run, roll. There is much more combat. That is the main distinguishing feature. This game has combat going on, whereas Inside was like one hit, you're dead. This game has combat. You will have enemies to duel and fight with. You can pick up a shield and a weapon and block with the shield and attack with the weapon, and it has weak attacks and heavy attacks depending on how long you hold the button. And as a pro tip, never use the heavy attack because it takes way too fucking long to come out. Just use the light attack. It works out fine. You get a bow to shoot arrows at guys. You can throw your weapon. So you got some good options for combat and fighting enemies in this game, and it never does not feel good to throw an axe at a guy running at you and it just hits him in the forehead and he falls dead. And it never gets old when there's an archer shooting you and you just throw an axe at that motherfucker and he falls dead. Fuck archers in video games all the time. There's a few different like weapons that you can pick up along the way. They mostly act the same. There is some two-handed. There's like a two-handed weapon that acts a little bit differently, but for the most part, it's you know, nothing too crazy. The focus of the game is more on traversing these areas. Like, there's some light stealth elements, particularly early on, where you're avoiding raiders from the group that raided your village, and you're trying to escape through the woods without getting into combat with them. But yeah, for the most part, you are running left to right, and then eventually you start to get blessings from the gods, the Norse gods, and you can set your weapon on fire and have it have lightning, and you can run really fast, and you can stomp the ground, and you can... My favorite thing is that you can throw your weapon and then push a button to call it back to you. So you throw that axe into that motherfucker's head, and then you call it right back out of his head, and it comes spinning back to you, and it looks good and feels good. But for the most part, you're running left to right through all these levels, or these areas, and just like kind of the real star of this game, I feel, is the backgrounds that you're running through. The game just looks really nice, I think, and especially like this game. This is a one-man game, and the backgrounds just have like a really great depth to them. There's like lots of stuff going on that's interesting to look at, you know, characters moving up out of it, things going out into it, just seeing levels kind of sprawl back out of, you know, the area where you're concerned with, which is this very direct path from left to right where you're going to find vengeance from your fallen lover. At least we think so. So you'll end up traversing some temples, which will have traps that you have to avoid. There's not really much in the way of puzzle solving. Like every now and then you'll get into an area where you kind of have to explore around and find like these beacons to hit to open a door. But that's about it. It is not a one hit and done scenario like some of those other games. Like you have a health bar and the health bar regenerates. So it is really good about making sure you're moving forward and not dying for the most part. I will say jumping can be a little awkward in this game sometimes, which got me killed by traps in annoying fashion sometimes. But, you know, that was fine. I did find myself, so, you know, I mentioned like all the things you can do in combat, but at a certain point I realized that you could just kind of roll past enemies and then run until you had to climb up something, and you could just avoid a lot of the combat, which, I don't know, could be bad, but for me is, like, good, because I am moving game along, and I am still, like, you know, I'm still fighting some things eventually.
Is there an experience system? Are you missing out on anything by not fighting
him? I don't believe so. No, there's no kind of character progression. Like, it's very straightforward. No character progression other than like the power-ups I mentioned before that you find. So at least as far as I could tell, there is no penalty to just zipping your butt right past encounters you don't want to deal with, just so long as you have enough stamina to then climb the wall at the other end of it. But you know, sometimes that'll bite you in the ass. But it was fun to do that. Just like, oh, here's a bunch of guys. All right, roll. All right, see you guys. Bye. Not a bad thing. Some people, but my league is a bad thing, but I had fun with it. You know, you can engage in the combat more if you want to, and I don't think it is terrible, but like, you know, once I found a way to expedite the situation and spend more time gawking at the backgrounds, like, I was good. Something I want to mention that is tough to talk about because I don't want to overhype it, but this game has like a thing in it, like, that could be spoiled and is fun to see happen for yourself when it happens. And I don't want to overhype it, but I'm just saying there is a thing that is cool and like super unexpected that goes on at a certain point in this game that really threw me for a loop. That definitely helped leave a pretty good impression of the game, in my mind. The issues with the game, that I ran into, and, I actually did run into a like pretty bad bug that like just hard crashed the game every time I was in this one area, which the developer we notified the developer of, and he fixed.
Yay!
So no one here, so no one listening to this will experience this problem that I did. But still, like along the way, there is some other glitchiness that I ran into. Some of it was funny, some of it was annoying. Like there's sometimes where pieces of the environment that are between you and the camera. So, you know, if there's like a tree between you and the camera, like, you know, there'll be a moment where like there's just pure black as the camera goes past the tree is what it's trying to emulate. But like there was one of those areas in particular where it was just like making the screen flicker in a weird way as I was trying to run through it. I had some interesting things happen with physics in a couple areas where like you kind of fall down like a rock slide. And like one time I went down it okay. The second time I came down, like I guess my character model got a little bit slippy because she shot out of there like a fucking rocket. and it was just like, whoa, okay. You know, I had some other things where it's like, oh, this, like it was nothing. Other than the one thing that was literally game-breaking, there was nothing game-breaking, but it was just like, well, I can see kind of the hard edges here that, you know, might need a little bit of ironing out. Told you it was coming.
Yeah, you warned us. You did warn us.
I did warn you. Yeah, so, but, yeah, it did not ruin my enjoyment of the game. What almost did was the load times in a couple areas where things were especially like the game takes a long time to load up when you boot it from the Xbox menu. And I'm playing on an Xbox One X. I am not on the Series X. I'm not on the best hard drive you could be playing this on. So I'm sure that has undoubtedly something to do with it, but it was like a long time to load into the game. And I mean, when I say a long time, I mean like I would count it in minutes, maybe like a couple minutes from menu to in the game. and then it has to load your save. And then, like, you know, what makes some of these games work sometimes is that you die, and then it loads you back in real quick. This is not that. You die, and then it can be, like, upwards of a minute to a minute and a half before it loads your ass back in there. There was one encounter that I could not run past that was particularly difficult, or I was having a difficult time with anyway, that I'm just like, I was dying very quickly, and then I was like having to wait about a minute and a half, and I timed it. I got my stopwatch out. What was funny is that when I finally got my stopwatch out, the next time I did it was when I actually got past it. but I was able to time how long the load was once, and it was like a minute and 20 some seconds. And that is rough when you're having a tough time in a spot and you don't know what's going on and it's making you die, or you are being, I don't know, you're making yourself die, the game's making you die, you know, column A, column B, to like get back in there and try it again for a few seconds. Like, that sucks. And I hope that's better on a Series X console or something that can be, you know, better optimized in the future. But yeah, a little bit of bugginess aside and some load times, like, I had this game was exactly what I had hoped it would be, in a entertaining romp through some really nice looking Norse vistas with some, you know, some fun enough combat to fuck around with a bit. Some surprises along the way.
Overall, 20 bucks on this one. What do you say?
Yeah, I definitely recommend checking this one out. I think it's worth it. It's not super long. I guess I will say that it's probably 4 or 5 hours max. But the achievements still weren't like I was on. You guys have probably had more experience with this than me, where like I was unlocking achievements, but the achievement list wasn't there.
Oh, yeah. It happens before games go live. It even happens sometimes when games do go live and the achievements just aren't up on Microsoft's side yet, so it happens.
Yeah. I didn't check it today, but like they were some big chonky achievement points. Like, for clearing the game, you get 200 points. Like, that achievement was 200. So for y'all achievement hunters, this might be an easy way to get 1,000 achievements in a few hours.
A few hours is not an easy achievement anymore.
Okay, Well, I mean, like, you can get all the achievement. Well, I mean, I guess, yes, there is lower standards for that, and I have reviewed some of those games. But in this case, you actually also get a good game to go along with it.
Okay, I'll concede there.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess that is it for you, Tim. We'll let you get going.
Time to go to bed. I got to get up early for work. Of course.
All right, have yourself a good one. Any final words?
Good night. No, I doled out the worst joke I had earlier. So.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
You really did.
Catch y'all later. I did. Bye.
Later.
Next game is Arietta of Spirits, developed by Third Spirit Games, published by Red Art Games, released August 20th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99, PC for $14.99. Arietta of Spirits is a story-driven action-adventure game following Arietta on her journey to unveil the mysteries of the spirit realm. Immerse yourself in a story filled with emotion and surprising turns. Cole, tell us about your time with Arietta of Spirits.
So, Arietta of Spirits is basically a more modern Zelda, like classic Zelda type of game, in that you have a large overworld that you can kind of explore occasionally. You can go into buildings and things and poke around too, but ultimately you're exploring the island that your family typically goes on vacation to with your grandmother on a yearly basis. This is the first time that Arietta and her family have gone back to the island since her grandmother passed the previous year. And the trip is actually kind of bittersweet for her and her mother and her father, seeing as the mother's mother is no longer there.
I can hear that so well with your microphone.
I mean, the other mic picked it up too, but
it's like so clear. Like, I thought it was one of my cats like chewing on cardboard or something.
I'm sorry. The rabbit has to drink water.
That's hilarious. Oh man. Sorry, we'll be talking about that microphone on the next episode of the show.
anyway, so Sage's nonsense aside, Arietta and her family are back on the island for the first time since her grandmother has passed. And initially, the game just starts out fairly simple. You know, your father gives you a little wooden sword so that you can swat away wasps while you go collect apples so your mother can make an apple crumble. But that would be kind of a boring experience if you were just swatting away paper wasps all the time, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, things have to ramp up, and we see that when Arietta learns that she is bound to the spirit world. There's a whole lot of lore involved. I give the devs credit for like how they worked the spirit realm in with the story and made it fit in with Arietta being in the real world, and how they've justified, like they've thought about every little detail about how the spirits will interact with the human world. I don't want to go too far into giving anything away, but ultimately it boils down to Arietta meets a spirit named Arco. And Arco is an adorable, like, little ferret-looking spirit dude with a leaf in the middle for hair. And Arco is bound to Arietta. She is literally what they call a bound. And he's able to help her out as they explore some of the spiritual sides of the island that she's, you know, gone to for her entire life. She's realizing that there's this completely different side to things that she didn't know about. There are some moments in the story that kind of hit where it felt like maybe the developers had wanted to add in options, but then scrapped it for whatever reason. The story very much sets you up as like, you can choose to stay a bound, or you can, you know, say goodbye forever. And then you don't actually have any say. There is no actual choice. And these kind of moments pop up a lot throughout the story. I don't dislike it, but I think even if they had given us an arbitrary choice that may not have made any difference in the plot, but at least let us feel like we were doing something, it might have at least played out a little better. Instead, I just kind of constantly found myself going, but what if I made the other choice? What if I wanted to do the other thing instead? And so it kind of just felt like something was missing because I didn't have that choice. The other thing that I want to address with the game is that for the combat, it's very, you know, classic Zelda. You just like, you can control with the D-pad or the thumbsticks. You up, left, right, down. You can move on a diagonal, and enemies can attack on a diagonal, but when Arietta actually swings her weapon, it makes like an arch around her. So if you kind of like imagine a D-pad as a 9 grid, it would hit whatever 3 you know, blocks on the grid would be touching. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So surrounding Arietta, basically she would be the center of the grid. It's fine, but it kind of leads to some really bullshit moments where you're like, I don't know what's going on with the hitboxes, because that definitely should have hit something. And it's also a little more unfair when the enemies do attack on the diagonal. With the bigger bosses that do it, it didn't seem to be as big a deal, because obviously they have the larger hitbox, right?
Yeah.
But the smaller little enemies that like has lose so much life because a small little enemy would come at me on a diagonal and I would 100% think it was going to land in those 3 squares that should hit, and then it just wouldn't hit it. So it was never consistent enough to actually be able to plan. You can dodge roll, but it doesn't it's kind of, again, it's inconsistent as to whether or not it actually gives you iframes when you dodge roll. So there would be one part of the story, there are these, like, spiky vines on the ground. One time I might roll past it and it would be fine and I would not take any damage, and the next time it would kick me back and give me damage. I would like a little more consistency with the hits. It's not game breaking or frustrating to the point where I didn't want to play. It was just more like, help me out here. I'm never sure if what I'm going to do is going to work. That said, the game has multiple difficulties. You can play it on easy and there's plenty of like health littered around, and enemies don't attack, you know, take as much damage and they don't do as much damage, which is all well and good. However, the game does kind of punish you if you play on an easier difficulty, because there is an achievement for completing it on the hardest difficulty. And that's balls. I don't like that ever.
Oh, well.
So, you know, it is what it is. It's already there, but I'm going to bitch about it because maybe it'll deter them in their next game from doing that. But that's an accessibility thing that you shouldn't do.
Well, overall, what are you thinking on this one? It's $20. It sounds really good, aside from a few hiccups. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, for $20, I think there's definitely enough there to justify the cost. It's really pretty. Pixel art isn't even my favorite. I usually kind of like snub it, to be honest. I feel about pixel art like I do with anime chins. It's just horribly overused and tropey, and I'm kind of like over it. But the pixel art that is in Arietta and Spirits, it's beautiful. It's really well done. Character designs are good. I don't dislike it or think it's a detriment in any kind of way. I just think the things that I did bitch about are kind of quality of life stuff. And so I'm okay still giving it a buy it, because it holds up enough despite the quality of life stuff.
Despite the fact you'll never get one achievement.
I'm never fucking getting that achievement.
Me neither. next game to talk about is Lamentum, developed by Obscure Tales, published by Neon Doctrine, released August 31st on Xbox One for $15.99. Lamentum is a pixel art survival horror game set in New England in the mid-19th century. To solve the dark secret at heart of the Grow Hill Mansion, you'll have to immerse yourself in a nightmare world full of terrible creatures. Choose well in whom to trust. Every decision you make may alter the course of the story. Will you survive? Being it's a horror game, Cole, obviously you would have done this, but Purnell's on it. What's going on there?
It said that it was Resident Evil inspired, and I was like, fuck that. I'm very, very over nostalgia for Resident Evil.
But what I will say in response to that is, every one of you guys who make games like this, mention that in your title so I get the games. Because this is my cup of tea, which is especially great because at base value, when this was mentioned to me, I was kind of not jazzed about it. I thought it would be pretty dumb. I didn't care for it. Like, it just was not something that seemed interesting to me. But upon getting started with it, this officially became my surprise pick of the week, because it took up my entire Saturday night, where I really just wanted to kill time while eating some Mapo Tofu.
God damn.
This is a legitimately solid game. And I've hit this point where I'm like, a couple months ago, I reviewed a game called Yuppie Psycho, which is another, you know, pixel art horror-esque game that unexpectedly really clicked for me. And I think I've come to realize this may be my bag. People keep making quality games like this. Now that I'm done gushing about the game before even reviewing the damn thing, I should review it. So Lamentum takes place, like Jill mentioned, like it's pretty much 17th century or whatever. And the idea here is that the main character's wife, she's kind of hit some Silent Hill notes here, I'll admit, but the main character's wife is very sick. And at the time, medicine has no idea how to help her. He gets a letter regards to this, or he hears of a place where a guy works outside of the realm of modern medicine. He decides to take his wife there for treatment. Crazy shit happens, and now you're dealing with eldritch horrors. Because of course you are.
Yay.
Do that thing where they kind of flip the narrative around where you don't know where you fit into it once you get started at a certain point in the game, basically when the game kicks off in earnest. But that is also how they are able to layer the narrative in a way where you're kind of interested in the documents you come across and the characters that you meet and what their role in everything is. I can easily picture a couple people playing this game and going, well, obviously this is what's going on. And that's totally fine. I mean, we've been playing games like this for years, so a lot of these narrative beats are going to just stick out to you like a sore thumb. I get it. But I also feel like that does not diminish the quality that comes out of this game. Because they did the environments right and the atmosphere right, and I do like the way the stories talk, because as you're running around this mansion trying to find your wife, you do come across other characters who have lines of dialogue or tribute to them that give you some exposition on who they were, are, and, you know, how or what relationship you may or may not have with those people. The actual exploration of the game is you traversing the grounds of Grove Hill Mansion. You walk from room to room down hallways and corridors, and this place is being skulked by creepy shit. When you come across said monsters, you aren't defenseless. This isn't Shattered Memories here. You can fight back. And the way you do that is by way of two different types of weapons. You have melee weaponry and you have ranged weaponry. Melee weaponry is interesting because when you press the button, you don't swing your weapon immediately. Your character actually has a deliberate animation that plays out in the process of attacking with your weapon. Someone at base value would see that and go, this is stupid. I should press the button and attack. But I kind of like how they did it, because whereas some games like to do silent, horror games by making it as if the main character is just completely inept with using weaponry, so he's like cumbersome and shit, this game decided to go with the element of timing, because every melee weapon you find has a slightly different timing to it. And when you go into your animation, you're committed to swinging the weapon, which means if you don't time it well, the monster will roll up on you and do some damage to you. But if you time it right, you'll be able to hit the enemy and then kind of like parry away and set up another attack and do it again. And further still, sometimes you'll actually do like a, what I've been considering as crits, which will either push the enemy back a little bit or even stun them so you can just start wailing on them until they die. I love when that happens. And then they made the ranged weapons that you come across in the game. They have ammunition which is found throughout the map. This is the 17th century. What does that mean? Well, the weapons are single load weapons. So when you get the ammo and you have the gun, it takes up two slots in your inventory. And when you fire off a shot, your next press of the button requires you reloading the gun. The next press is you firing it again. Left trigger gets you in the stance of aiming the gun. Right stick aims what direction you're firing it in, and then the right trigger pulls the shot. Believe it or not, I went into horde mode in this game, and I rarely, if ever, use bullets. I always felt like I would need them for something more important later on, which means I got really good with melee combat. So I would go so far as to say you don't even need the gun if you really want to get down like that, but it's nice to have access to it there if you need to keep that distance gunplay going. And it is more powerful than most of the melee weapons. As you traverse the environment, there are items you can come across and pick up. Primarily puzzle items, you know, things you can use to unlock doors, you know, the key that's shaped like a root, the key that's shaped like a snake, you know, that, the usual tropes that exist in these mansions with their really bizarre and stupid layouts. Who designs a mansion with one key that opens only oddly placed doors throughout? No one does that. But at the same time, it does make for a fun game. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. You have those kinds of keys. There are like some collectible coins you can come across that are hidden throughout the game. And then the healing item of choice in this game is called laudanum. And the way it works is not quite like herbs, but close enough in that when you find laudanum, it comes in two forms, a full bottle and a half bottle. Full bottle does a decent job of healing you. Half bottles are kind of shit. But if you find two halves, you can combine them into one and chug it, and there you go, put your heal on. Depending on how efficient you are at playing the game, you could either find yourself littered with healing potions or wishing you weren't so bad at the game. Because I had a moment, a few moments early in the game where I was struggling to carry it, And then later on in the game, I had 6 full bottles in my storage because I was just getting that good in melee combat. And then they started hitting you with guys who have like creepy long-range attacks and crap. So prepare yourself. They do like to throw weird enemies in the mix when you think you're comfortable to kind of throw off your feng shui. There are multiple endings to the game. There are segments where there's dialogue choices that will result in how people perceive you, which could in turn also result in you getting a different conclusion to the game. The overall feel I have for this title, though, is that it is a quality good time. Like, again, I forgot to mention the inventory system itself. So you get 9 slots to carry items in, and the top 3 are associated with the 3 face buttons on your controller. They're basically shortcut keys. So if you put the lantern in the X button slot, every time you press X, you'll pull the lantern out, and if you push it again, you'll put it away. Same for, like, B or Y. This is how you'll be most likely using your weapons in that lantern, because the game is dark in a lot of places, and when you're holding a lantern, you're not holding a weapon. So you'll be carrying this lantern around, you're a creepy jerk, and you go, fuck, time to fight. And you got to know, the game doesn't particularly go completely dark except in a few places, but when you put that lantern away, much of the light around you is gone, and that monster's still coming. So you're like, darn, swing! And you're like hoping that your timing is so that he comes into your light circle just as you're bringing the hammer in. So it actually adds a bit of tension before you get accustomed to it, as you're balancing between hitting the lantern and bringing out the axe, and those shortcut keys make it much easier to pull that off. So you'll be getting much use out of those options. I rambled a lot about this game, but I genuinely feel as though this is a game that is a good time, a surprise release. And if I could think of one thing I wish they would change for future players, though I did eventually get used to it, is if there were a way to either lessen the sound of or turn off the sound of the main character's footsteps when he runs, because it's a clomp, 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 clomp sound. And initially I was like, this is kind of drowning out the enjoyment for me. This is too loud. But over time, I just got used to it because I heard it so much. So, but it would be better if you didn't have to get used to it at all. Just get rid of it or dampen it. Give me an option to dampen the sound. And yes, there is a sound effect, slide bar, but I don't want to dampen all the sounds, just his damn footsteps. There you go. So I'll stop rambling.
Well, footsteps aside, $16 on it. What do you think?
Absolutely worth it. Buy this game. If you like horror, if you like pixels, if you like pixel horror, it's worth your money.
Cool beans. All right, joining us, Chris Taylor made it. Chris, how are you doing?
Oh, hi.
God.
Hey, Chris.
Hello.
How's it going? You made it.
Yeah, I'm very sweaty.
Well, you do live in Texas, though.
Well, yeah, I just worked a 12-hour day, and even though my day ended at about 8:30 p.m., like, the sun going down doesn't make it less hot in Texas.
Yeah, true.
It's currently 90 degrees outside and there's no sun. Yeah, that's okay. I'm ready to get sweaty with some reviews.
Sweaty with reviews.
All the games you're reviewing, but count me out.
Well, let's see how sweaty you get, because the next game to talk about is Ambition, a Minuet in Power, developed by Joy Manufacturing, published by Iceberg Interactive, released August 18th on Steam for $19.99. 18th century Paris, a city of love, lies, and revolution. You are a woman of fashion trying to survive the political turmoil. Date a cast of unforgettable characters, amass the wealth and respect you deserve, engage in gossip that can alter the course of history or lead you to the guillotine. Chris, what's going on in Ambition?
Oh, I got my head cut off good.
Did you?
No, just kidding. No.
Aw.
Nah, I know. I should have, though. I'm going to try at some point, because that can actually happen. Okay, so Ambition, a Guillotine of Power, or whatever it's called, is a Minuet in Power. Is basically a visual novel, but also kind of a... It's hard to say. Like, well, it's a certain flavor of visual novel. So at its core, it is the story of a lady who gets engaged to a baron who lives in Paris during the revolution.
Fucking yeah!
A couple hundred years ago. Don't ask me how many hundreds of years ago. I don't know my history.
Well, it's not 100 years ago, but 28 months. Cole, you've been subscribing. What's going on with that?
I had the thing pulled up and forgot to hit enter on it.
She's like, I love the French Revolution.
She was excited French about Revolution, this game and decided that now would be the perfect time to sub.
Yeah.
Let them eat pancakes, right?
It reminded me that, you know, pancakes.
Hey.
Anyway.
All right, where was I? Oh, yeah, the very beginning where I hadn't talked really yet. Okay.
Nailed it.
So you play a lady named Yvette. I don't know what her, like, baroness title is, so, you know, it's
a long name.
There's like, actually a long name involved with this lady that I did not memorize, did not commit it to memory, but her, like, original name was Yvette something. And so she gets engaged to this guy, and he's, like, sending her letters saying, yes, come live with me in Paris, and, you know, we're gonna do it up. And so basically the game opens with you getting to Paris for the first time as, like, essentially a villager, someone who probably sang songs about this provincial life and whatnot. There goes the baker with his tray, like, oh, wait.
Fuck you too,
and now we're going to get canceled.
Disney's coming for us now.
Yeah, Disney's coming for us. Oh, well. Damn my perfect pitch. she basically, you know, she goes to move there, but it turns out that this house is kind of like, it's a mansion, but it's also kind of a shambles, and fiance nowhere to be found. And it seems like he's, like, getting into weird stuff politically, and just some, like, shady stuff that is basically kind of a mystery to unravel as the story unfolds. But conveniently, this means you're basically left on your own, just you and the maid, essentially. And so your task through this novel is to kind of go along the calendar and go to parties and different events and such. And so, and actually, funny enough, going to parties is, like, a major mechanic of this game. So basically, when your day starts, you might end up getting, like, an invitation to, you know, something or other. And so when you accept it, that gets put on your calendar. Well, all the days up to the calendar, you can basically do, like, kind of one thing a day. I mean, you know, this is a lady of wealth, I suppose, so she can only do one thing a day. and one of those is shopping. dedicated party button? Kind of, yeah, actually. So one of those things is shopping, and interestingly, the shopping mechanic, you basically pick out a dress, and each dress has stats, you know, on it, which basically it'll plus or minus your reputation with one of, like, it's like five or six different factions. So, like, the church, the bourgeoisie, the military, and, like, the crown, and the revolutionaries. And so, like, one dress might impress some revolutionaries if you're going to go hang out with them, and sometimes it might knock some points off. So the purpose of the points is that you basically have these reputation points that get awarded to you based on your interactions with characters at parties or various events that happen through the story, like what kind of dress you're wearing and who you're talking to and about what. And so it ends up being, like, a really engaging visual novel because you're basically trying to rack up these points. And the points are so that you can get, like, one of the things that you can do in this game. There's actually a few things. Is you can, like, gain gossip, and then you can sell the gossip to the newspaper, which gets you money, which gets you more dresses. So there's, like, this whole, like, it's functionally such a game, even though it's, like, kind of ridiculous in its premise. But it becomes pretty, like, interesting because you really are, like, kind of dealing with, you know, the bourgeoisie versus the crown versus the church versus the revolutionaries, and you kind of get caught up in all of it. And, of course, each one of those factions has a handsome man attached to it whom you can date. And, of course, you can also date your fiance, but who wants to do that?
Yeah,
because he does
gross.
Show up.
I mean,
he shows up occasionally. So I was kind of getting friendly with the military guy. I don't know his name. I don't remember it. What do I care? I'm a fancy woman in France.
Harry.
Yeah. What was his name? It'll come to me anyways. So, anyway, there's two different stats in the game that kind of determine what your outcome is going to be. Besides your actual reputation with individual people, which, by the way, they are like traceable stats, so you can find out how you're doing with a particular person at any point. But your reputation basically goes up and down. A piece of advice, when you're playing through the beginning of the game, don't worry about your reputation. It's going to be reduced down to zero at the start of chapter one proper because of events. So feel free to play around because this game actually kind of is cool like that. But anyways, the other one is peril. So when you are mean to people, if you talk to the wrong person about the wrong thing, if you wear the wrong dress, you may end up with peril points. And when the peril points get up to the max, according to the game, bad things happen, quote unquote. So,
oh shit.
Yeah. And so you can like work through interactions again to reduce your peril, raise your reputation. And of course, you can't party all the time because then you get exhausted. Oh, so then you have to spend a day with yourself, drinking wine, reading books, whatever. Apparently not cleaning this mansion, because nobody cleans the mansion. It is a pigsty. Anyways, you do like all this. You have to like take a day off to rest, and then that, if you're too exhausted, then you lose reputation as soon as you get to a party. So apparently you're just like tired and cranky. And I'm really impressed with how much stuff they like put into this game that I thought was literally just going to be you're a fancy lady in France and you have to date a bunch of dudes. I mean, there is that aspect to it, but it's such a it's just a small part of like this bigger whole. It's actually a pretty engaging story, and and it's a little bit couched in history, so that's kind of nice. And it's a game where it's a visual novel where you can get your head chopped off. So I mean, hey,
win-win, right?
For me, yeah.
Cool. So $20 on this one. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I actually say this one is definitely worth a look. If you are hesitant about visual novels, but you like something that's maybe a little bit more engaging and stuff. I mean, it is, of course, at the end of the day, choosing things and like raising stats and whatnot. But there's really a game here. So I'm going to say it's a buy it if you're a visual novel fan. If you're not a fan, still check it out because this is actually pretty good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, next up is Alveol, developed by Emil Ismailov and Denis Petrov, published by Sometimes You. I'm sure I just nailed every single name there. released September 1st on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and Switch for $4.99. This is not a cross-generational purchase title. Ensure you buy the proper version or buy both for achievement and trophy stacks. I'm not going to judge. Alveol is a minimalistic puzzle where the player must understand how to run and why does he do it. Alveol is a short experimental project that explores the possibilities of the player in a restricted environment where there's only one game mechanic elevated to the absolute. Cole, what does that mean?
You are a little dude in a hamster wheel. It is a stark-ass white screen with a black doodled hamster wheel and the outline of a silhouette, and he's just running. Every day he just runs on the wheel, and it's up to you to decide if he's going to clear the occasional obstacle that pops up, or if he's going to run into it, or how he's going to clear it. Is he going to clear all the obstacles? Is he going to clear one, fall over one, then clear one, fall over one? There are a surprisingly large number of ways that you can approach only being able to press A to jump every now and then. The way that you decide to approach the circle and running and whether or not you're going to jump affects which ending you'll get, because eventually the dude falls on his face. You may get an ending for deciding to press buttons at random on a certain day, or for jumping over one obstacle and then just not moving for the rest. You may get a different ending. I think there were 16 different endings. I had to stop and think about it. after I started to say, I couldn't remember if it was 8 or 16. I think there's 16 endings. That's a lot of endings
for just jumping.
I'm telling you. Because the little dude runs in the hamster wheel automatically. You don't control that. But you literally just press A every now and then, or maybe one other button that may or may not do anything to make a difference. You don't know. You can just sit and hammer away at the controller, but you don't ever know what's actually going to do you any good. There are some guides out there if you want to actually get all the endings and want to know when you're supposed to push a button that's not A. if yeah, you're
just like
to.
Real life, you don't know what you're doing.
I mean,
running with no clue what we're doing in life.
So that's really the whole point of it. Like, that's the whole point of the game, is to be like, we all look like we know what we're doing. You can finish the game and look like you know what you did, but you ain't really fucking know. Like, unless you use the guide, you're just sitting out here going, well, I pushed the button and shit happened. Yay me. And that's real life. I'm going to tell you that one. That is real life. You wake up in the morning and you go, I'm going to push some buttons and hope that it works out. So kudos to them that their little social experiment worked. I'm not mad at it. I can't even be like, oh, it's obtuse and weird. Like, it is, but for the point they're trying to make, it works.
Well, how are the achievements? Is this an easy achievement game?
Yeah, especially if you use a guide. Now, if you're trying to, like, find all the different endings on your own, you're probably going to struggle because, again, some of them are really obtuse. but, you know, if you're just taking your chances and seeing what you can make pop. I was popping shit and then I would look at it and go, I don't know what I did. I didn't know what I did to pop it until I went back to look at a guide for the ones that didn't pop. And I was like, that's the button I pushed. Got it. Makes sense. Doesn't make sense. But I told myself it made sense because that was the only way I was going to let myself get away from this game.
Well, it's $5. What do you think of it?
This is one of those, like, if you really like the obscure, weird, thought-inducing kind of games, it's an easy buy it. If you're a little more on the fence and you're like, well, I might get it for the achievements, I'd probably just use the guide. Even still, I'd be like, fuck it, why not? Right? That's not a bad thing. We all know that.
Yeah.
But, if you're not into, you know, weird experimental concepts when it comes to gameplay, it's a little tougher of a sale, but it's still cheap and easy enough that you can still have fun with it.
All right. Other question. Mm-hmm. Is it worth buying twice for the achievement stacks or trophy stacks? Or do you think this is a game where you could pick it up on one platform and it's good enough?
It was good enough. I enjoyed, yeah. Like, I can imagine there's plenty hardcore enough achievement hunters that would be like, yeah, I'm going to buy it both. It's only like $10. And hey, you do you. I've done it. I'm not going to judge anybody else for doing it. But as far as this one in particular goes, you said it was stackable, and I was still like, yeah, I'm good.
All right, well, moving on. Next game to talk about is Pretty Girls Panic, developed by Zoo Corporation, published by East Asia Soft, released August 26th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $5.99. Use your tool to penetrate the barrier and expose that which lies beneath. Chris, this sounds like we're getting into After Dark territory, huh?
It would be, but this game is so much tamer than that.
Nope, okay. Tell us about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So this game is, folks who like played really dirty games back in like the 90s would recognize this style of gameplay because it has a long tradition. I don't know what it is about the like cutaway reveal picture style game. I don't know what the genre is called. I'm gonna have to come up with a good name for it.
But, I always called them like after Peek-a-boo. What is it? Kix? UIX?
Oh, Quix. Yeah.
Quix, Kix, whatever.
Quick
Peek-a-boo games.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boob.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, well, either way, this type of game has a long tradition of, like, mostly Japanese-only, like, basically prawn games that, you know, you're revealing, like, naked pictures and whatnot, some of which have gained notoriety for flipping it around to being, like, grotesque images if you don't do it, you know, at certain times and stuff.
I've seen those.
You've seen them? Yeah, yeah, those are great.
They're pretty crazy.
Yeah, I played a few of those on, like, PlayStation 1, so, like, that's how far back this whole thing goes. I mean, it goes all the way back, really, but anyways. Okay, so this is like that. What you are doing is you play a little, it looks like a little octopus with, like, kind of a Japanese chef, like, headband kind of thing. There's no explanation. There's no explanation for anything in this entire game, by the way. So we just have to leave it to our imagination. And we'll get to our imagination in a second. So you basically move across a screen. And as you move, you draw a line. And when you get the line to connect to something else, like if you start on the wall and you connect a line to the wall, then that section that you just drew disappears, and there's, you know, a picture underneath, of course. But the thing is, before you build, like, before the actual line is complete, if you get hit by one of the obstacles that's in the stage, all of which are like sea life, ocean life, like themed, like starfish, turtles, you know, fishies and whatnot, pufferfish, and little jellyfish, I guess, that shoot electric bolts. Like, anyway, those are really annoying. But yeah, if you get hit before you know, finish the line, the block or whatever, the line drawing, then you are destroyed. And you have, like, 6 lives per puzzle to get through. Now, if you lose all 6 lives, you just have to start the puzzle over. That's not a problem. The game has 2 difficulty levels, so you can get through all of the content on normal mode with not too much experience with these kind of things. So anyways, so that's the gameplay. It's actually pretty fun. I actually enjoy this genre.
I've always liked the game mechanics. I'm sad that these games don't appear on Xbox because they're more adult themed or fan servicey themed, and I guess Xbox doesn't want those kind of games around, which I think sucks. Just fucking let us play the games we want to play on that's what Xbox is about. Play where you want to play, right? So let us play our pervy titty games on Xbox, please. That would be nice.
So, as you go through the levels, of course it drops more enemies, challenge goes up, and the pictures get more lewd. However, understand that, like, even though this game is rated for partial nudity, it has zero nudity. This is actually not a very racy game. It does, like, the most that you're going to see, I actually unlocked all the content in this game just so I could say this authoritatively. The raciest thing that you're going to see in this particular title is a microkini. Which, you know, on anime girls and stuff, but, like, everything is left to the imagination. Nothing is, fully revealed at all. So that, you know, if you are playing this one, I would say that this is more for the gameplay than for the fan service. Although, of course, the pictures are fan service-y, the girls are very voluptuous, etc. Some of them skew on the young side. I don't like that. But considering the games that, you know, came out in the PlayStation era, we got off easy.
Hi-yo!
Yeah. Actually, you know, funny enough on this one, I actually like the gameplay more than I like the reward for such. So, this one's actually kind of fun to play.
Cool, and it's only $6, so what's your verdict?
I say buy it if you like the quick style peek-a-boob type of gameplay, but not if you're actually looking for, you know, actual nudity or anything like that. You know, then you have to go to, like, Block Knockers or Waifu Uncovered or something like that.
Yeah, Aki will have to look elsewhere for her titties.
Exactly, yeah, this isn't for an Aki. But
okay. Sadly, those two games didn't even have titties because I've played both of them.
Oh.
They're fun games, though. That's not to the bed. No, I'm sorry. Waifu Uncovered did have it, but
yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure Block Knockers had it.
My friend, my friend who got like really weirdly obsessed with it for a while, like, yeah, she uncovered like actual nudity somehow.
Maybe I gotta go back to it. I forgot, but
I haven't played Block Knocker, so I don't know.
It's a good time.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on, next game to talk about is Orbibot, developed by PS Games, published by Rattalaika Games, released August 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4 and PS5, August 26th on the Switch for $4.99. Orbibot is a game in which you control a ball-shaped robot and solve physics and logic-based puzzles. Being a ball doesn't limit you as much as you can control buttons, laser switches, and doors to reach the end of the level. Sometimes you'll need to use barrels or metal balls to get to your destination. Will you find the teleporter that will take you to the next level? Pernell, tell us about Orbibot.
Gaffey kind of did.
Well, then tell us, is it worth $5?
I'll talk about it. So Orbibot is a series of levels. There aren't a ton, actually, in the game. It's just they are not the easiest sometimes. Of stages where the goal is just to get Orbibot from the beginning of the stage to the end of it, though hitting in each stage is also a like pinata alpaca, but they call it a cat. I don't ask questions. I just know they're hitting in the stage. And as you're progressing through each level, your controls are to roll Orbibot. Like that's all he does. Like there's no jumping. There's no abilities. It's just roll Orbibot. And that in itself would normally be pretty solid to me because I generally like games like that. I used to play Mercury Meltdown, which is hard as balls, but it had some cool mechanics. Orbibot, however, for me, like as I played it, you explore levels, and as you progress, you generally come across switches that open doors or switches that activate like things like burner jets, which kind of push Orbibot off of stages or across the ledges or whatnot. And you have to roll over these switches to either open up doors or deactivate or activate devices. But you're not always capable of actually reaching those, or sometimes you have to put something on top of a switch in order to make it so that the effect lasts beyond your being present. And what ends up happening there is you come across like other switches sometimes that will do things such as generate unending availability of metal orbs that can be rolled by pressing Orbibot into them. And if those balls hit a switch, they will activate it. Or in other cases, for a switch where you might need to hold it down, you can roll push a block over on top of said switch to make it stay down. Now, at the core, the game is pretty much exactly as it's described to be. You're rolling through tubes sometimes, you're hitting blocks and things of that nature, but it comes at a cost, and that cost is a lot of frustration. So, for example, this is really early in the game, though. There's a segment where, like, you are on a platform. Well, Orbibot is also just kind of stiff to control, but you get used to that. However, early on in the game, there's a segment where you're on a platform and you have to roll up a sort of chute to get to the level above it. And that chute is just two wires that run parallel to each other that kind of roll up. Typically, when you see those in a game that have marbles, that kind of cradles the ball so that you don't have to worry about balancing on it so much as just don't overshoot the roll so you don't shoot off the side of it. But in this game, it's purely cosmetic, which means you have to perfectly position the ball and perfectly roll it up this chute when the chute should be holding the barbell in place, which means you're going to fall a lot. That means you're going to fall a lot because you will. It is a pain in the ass. And there's other weird things too, like design wise. Like for example, there's elements where sometimes I mentioned earlier, you have to push blocks sometimes to set them on top of switches so that they stay activated. However, you are a marble, and blocks are squares that kind of get pushed around, not nudgingly, they get bonked. So even when you finesse them, which you can do, it takes a lot of effort, but you can finesse them. Sometimes you can kind of push them around. However, let's say for example. And those happened at least to me twice. Let's say you have to push the block onto a switch and you accidentally overshoot it. The block goes off the edge of the mat or it ends up in a situation where you can't get the marble behind it to push it back into place. There is no reset option for the blocks
And if you roll off the stage and get sent back to a checkpoint, it doesn't reset the blocks that were over there. You have to restart the stage again because there ain't no way to push the block if you can't get behind them because you set them up incorrectly before, because there's no way to manipulate the blocks beyond pushing them. So it's kind of annoying. It sucked. When the bog is rolling, you can find elements of joy in solving puzzles. Because again, it is at its core just a puzzle game involving marble manipulation, one marble manipulation. You still find yourself in these scenarios. You're just like, am I having fun? Or am I just going through the motions here? Because there's some cool little elements that pop up. Like there's one segment where you have to roll down a chute, but there's a jet that needs, that will push you off if you don't, you know, shut it off. But the only switch that activates it is a time, is a switch that only works when it's depressed. So you have to create a marble, then push that marble down the hill, and then roll along, time your roll down the hill so that the marble rolls over the switch as you roll past the chute so that you can get, you know, past the jet before it gets reactivated again. Stuff like that can be pretty cool. But you're also fighting the controls to do it, and also just the general sense of just like bounce on these environments. So it's weird because you might be hearing me talk about this and go, does that make this a bad game? And I don't think it really does. It didn't. It wasn't particularly appealing to me personally, which may be the review in and of itself. But I can see appeal in this game from other people that might like it because they just flat out want a game where you manipulate marbles to, you know, activate physics puzzles and things of that nature.
I mean, it's a niche that needs to be filled. I love marble games and ball games like this where you're just going through little obstacle courses. So I'm thrilled to see a game like this out and available, and the fact that it's only $5 has me excited.
Yeah, I mean, games like this are a joy when they, you know, when they click for me. So, like, I mean, because I've definitely played a few, and I've even played some that are not easy in the slightest. So it's not particularly a challenge that is the thing that sets me off on that. With that said, though, I mean, I guess it just kind of goes down to the player themselves. Like, if you heard what I described and you're okay with the idea of, like, the stuff not resetting and having to start the entire level over and things of that nature are okay with you, then that would be the price of admission for getting the otherwise good package. So for me, personally, I would deny it. But if those annoyances aren't annoyances to you, then it's at least a try.
All right. Sounds fair. One final game to talk about tonight is called Green Phoenix, developed by Broken Simulation, published by Zero Uno Games, released August 26th on Switch and Steam for $3.99. Green Phoenix is an on-rails 3D space shooter mixed with a deep narrative experience that focuses on the concept of ego and the meaning of freedom. Chris, tell us about Green Phoenix.
Okay, Green Phoenix. Well, it's about time I got to talk about this one.
Yeah, we've had this one for a while, and it got delayed, and now we're finally able to talk about it. So was the delay worth it? Is the game enjoyable?
Yeah, it's pretty good. So this game is a on-rails shooter with a spaceship, kind of like Star Fox. Well, no, like, that's too obscure. Like Soul Star on the game Sega CD. So, for all you Soul Star fans, that's basically what this is. he liked my
You're
joke.
Such a dick. Star Fox is too obscure. Oh, my lord.
All right. Okay. So, yeah, basically, it's behind the ship, and, you know, you shoot at things as they come up. Now, this game is minimal to a fault. That is to say, that may actually be a fault. My cat's actually messing with stuff behind me, so that might appear in the recording.
it's okay. We heard Cole's bunny drinking water earlier. So.
Nice.
He was very thirsty.
Yeah. That's awesome. My cat is just dumb. I'm all for bunnies hydrating.
Hydrate or dihydrate, y'all. Exactly.
So yes, this is where you play a ship called Green Phoenix, and you basically play through these stages. Now, again, this is like a camera's behind the ship, and you know, you just move around and shoot enemies. Now, I'll say right off the bat, game does give you the option for inverted y-axis, so yay. That's already a plus. You aren't locked into either thing, which is always something I look for in these kind of games. And now my cat's yelling at me. basically you go through the stages on rails and shoot at enemies as they come by. Enemies are largely like not really other ships, more like turrets and like defense system, kind of gunner things. This cat is like going ham in here. And actually, sadly, you cannot do a barrel roll to answer Carnage's question. The game has only two things that you can do. You can move and you can shoot. And the shooting buttons are oddly mapped to all four shoulder buttons, but none of the face buttons. The face buttons don't actually do anything. I mean, apart from menu stuff. Like I said, it's very simplistic. It's basically dodging things in these futuristic cityscapes and some other locations. I was asked not to reveal too much about this game, so I'm being vague. But I will say that the locations are pretty lovingly rendered, and they look very nice. The main thrust of this thing, get it, spaceship thrust, is that the ship is actually narrating a kind of story, like as you go through the stages. Now, again, this is something that's either something you're going that's a selling point or a huge detriment, depending on how you feel about it, because the computerized voice is speaking constantly through the game. There's not been a meaningful pause in like at any point. But the story is interesting. The other thing is that when the action gets a little bit more intense, you basically like, unless you're listening through like headphones or something with the volume cranked up, like you might miss a lot unless you actually pause the game and read the subtitles, every time a new line comes up, which I found myself doing in other stages. And like the story is compelling enough to keep pausing and reading, but if it wasn't, then that I would consider that a huge drawback to the gameplay because it interrupts the whole thing.
Yeah.
But, the action never really gets too intense. And, once you've completed the story, then you unlock an arcade mode, which lets you, without the story, just play endlessly and try, to survive as long as you can.
Cool. So it sounds like a small, simple kind of game. $4. What do you think?
Yeah, $4. I think it's worth it. If the combination of story and shooting sounds like it might be a bit much, which I have played games where it's a bit much, Sign Mora is one, and I can say that because I bought that with money twice. It's like so much story and it's so dense, and they're like going over these like terrible topics and stuff like that. Not like terrible, like badly written, but like terrible, like, dark, really dark subject matter. And like, all the time you're trying to shoot in a shmup, environment, like a, so like a game like that, if you are into that and you want that like to be an on-rail shooter, then this is your game. Go pick it up. Apart from that, I wouldn't say that, at $4, I can't really complain,
Yeah.
it's not gonna, win a whole bunch of awards, but I think it's worth picking up.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. That is it. We made it through.
Yay! We did
Yay,
it!
Yay! Hooray!
What a short episode!
Shut the fuck up! So quick and easy! Yeah.
Like, I didn't feel a thing.
We had an interview and 12 reviews, and you're saying it was short. You That's shut the hell up!
Here. It's because I was only here for like 30 minutes.
Oh man, yeah, thank you to all of you for being here, hanging out and keeping me company. Thanks to Tim for being here and doing his thing. Another big thanks to Dave Evans at Falling Squirrel for coming on and chatting about The Veil. Again, go check that out. That's on Xbox. You could just put on some headphones and enjoy that shit.
Yep,
good stuff. Anyone have any final words to end the episode?
No tangents.